The classified documents prepared for the German parliament last February make clear that Berlin did eventually get to see the detained suspect who was arrested in Morocco in 2002 as an alleged organizer of the 9/11 strikes. After the CIA offered a deal to Germany, EU countries adopted an almost universal policy of downplaying criticism of human rights records in countries where terrorist suspects have been held. They have also sidestepped questions about secret CIA flights, partly because of growing evidence of their complicity. The disclosure is among fresh revelations about how the CIA flew terrorist suspects to locations where they were tortured and Britain's knowledge of the practice known as secret rendition. This, according to The Guardian.
The New Jersey's highest court opened the door yesterday to making the state the second in the nation to allow gay marriage, ruling that lawmakers must offer same-sex couples either marriage or something like it, such as civil unions. The state Supreme Court declared 4-3 that gay couples are entitled to the same rights as heterosexual ones. The justices gave lawmakers 180 days to rewrite the laws. The court said the legislature must either amend the marriage statute to include same-sex couples or create a parallel statutory structure that gives all gays all the privileges and obligations married couples have. The three dissenters argued that the majority did not go far enough. They demanded full marriage for gays.
Now we're going to go back to membership land and see how things are going over there. Have we made our goal yet? I mean, should be.
No. It's a little chilly here in membership land. We need those phones to ring. We need to generate a little heat back here. I know it's early, but if you're up and you're listening to Chris, you're listening to KBOO News this morning, then you know your brain is already that much farther ahead of everybody else. So pick up that phone, make that neural connection, 503-232-8818, 1-877-500-KBOO. You know, if you're a listener right now to the sound of my voice, there's a reason. The reason is that the news programming on this radio station differentiates itself from everywhere else in that it's critical of the status quo, it is critical of the political and commercial establishment, and you're going to hear things on this program that you're simply not going to hear on the mainstream media, be it on television, on radio, or anywhere else. So there, it brings value to your life. It brings perspective that you're not going to find somewhere else. It makes you a more informed voter, a more informed consumer, a more informed and contributing member of your community. So pick up the phone right now. Give a little bit to the radio station that enriches your life, 503-232-8818.
And outside the Portland area. Yes, it's up to you. I'm outside the Portland area, 1-877-500-5266. We've had people called in from Camas and Bush Prairie, out in Hood River, and other places around the state in southern Washington who, like you, like to listen to community radio.
Keep us green. Don't forget, it takes green to keep us going. We often, those of us who consider ourselves progressive or on the left, complain that huge media conglomerates are able to reach so many more people and are able to drive public opinion because they've got so much money. Well, that's probably true, and there's one thing that you can do about that is contribute to programming like this. We are not beholden to corporate interests. We are only beholden to our members, you out there who call us at 503-232-8818. Or 1-877-500-5266. Our listeners are not some amorphous mass out there. You are individuals. You are people who really genuinely care about your community, about one another, about the state of things in the world. And you make a difference here. It's you as an individual that keep us going, that shape and give character to everything that we have on the air. Really, this is member-driven radio. You are what we don't put anything on the air because a sponsor is backing that particular program or whatever. It's you and what you are interested in hearing that drives exactly what we have on the air. Call us at 503-232-8818.
You know, that's one of the beauties about cable. You know, in fact, we'll put things on the air that you don't want to listen to, which is one of the beautiful things. You know, there's lots of different music and there's lots of different opinions that come on. And, you know, that's what makes the station great. We have this diversity and this variety of thing, and we also provide for many communities out in the town a station for them to play on. We've had the Vietnamese community on for a long time, Lebanese community, and also the Hispanic community. We've had them throughout the many years here at KBOO have come and done programs here for their own folks that we provide here, besides the public affairs and besides the music that we've done. The commitment to black music on the afternoons at the station made about 20 years ago or so, and we've kept with that. And it's like a lot of kids that get home from school and they've like tuned in KBOO just to hear music that they're not hearing on the more commercial stations out there.
503-232-8818.
So imagine what it's like if you didn't have us out there, really. We don't like to make threats, but, you know, we are do this so that we can stay in business and stay operating and stay keep broadcasting to you. And we've talked about, you know, the corporate broadcasting and the different ones. And, you know, we're the ones who keep doing it. So give us a call down here at 503-232-8818. Only you can keep community radio on the air.
That is absolutely right. It's 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. We've got news that we need to bring to you, and I'm going to trust that you will call. So now we're going to go back to the news. In Iraq, an angry Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki disavowed a joint U.S.-Iraqi raid in the capital, Sadr City, yesterday. Al-Maliki criticized the top U.S. military and diplomatic representatives in Iraq for saying his government needs to set a timetable to curb violence in the country. Al-Maliki spoke at a news conference a day after U.S. Ambassador Zalmay Khalilzad said Iraqi leaders had agreed to set deadlines by year's end for achieving specific political and security goals laid out by the United States, including reining in militia groups. The Prime Minister dismissed U.S. talks of timelines as driven by the coming midterm elections in the United States. Al-Maliki complained that he was not consulted beforehand about the Sadr City offensive. The raid was conducted by Iraqi special forces backed by U.S. advisors and was aimed at capturing a top militia commander wanted for running a Shiite death squad.
And photos apparently showing German troops posing with the skull in Afghanistan have caused outrage in Germany. The tabloid newspaper Bild, which carried the photos, said they showed German troops in Afghanistan in 2003. One of the pictures, a soldier is seen holding the skull next to his exposed penis, and on another, soldiers posted the skull on their jeep. German Chancellor Angela Merkel expressed disgust at the photos and said there would be a full investigation. This from the BBC.
President Hugo Chavez declared Venezuelan firmness in its quest for a seat on the UN Security Council and said it flies the flag of moral victory because the U.S. could not drag the country down despite its use of force. Addressing the 7th anniversary celebration of the Instituto Nacional de la Mujer, Chavez explained that Venezuela enjoys the firm support of 75 to 80 countries, including superpowers like China and Russia, the Southern Common Market, the Caribbean Community, and 80% of Latin America. At the UN, Chavez said his nation did not contend Guatemala, but U.S. attempts to block Venezuela's legitimate hopes to become the voice of the Third World and indigenous peoples. Chavez said that if Venezuela would have to choose a candidate by consensus, it would be Bolivia. This from Prensa Latina.
And also from Prensa Latina, the Popular Assembly of the Oaxaca Peoples increased its political demands yesterday and called for a peaceful insurrection on December 1st under the motto, "If Ulysses does not leave, Calderon will not reach power." The assembly calls refers to the inauguration of President-elect Felipe Calderon on December 1st and includes non-interference in the consultation today, where the local education union is deciding whether teachers return to classes. Meanwhile, the Assembly has given Governor Ulysses Ruiz 72 hours to resign, or it would stage a state strike and roadblock tomorrow. Among the new demands appear bringing the local governor before the Inspector General's office for the crimes and killings against the social movement, and that the office revise last week's senatorial refusal to eliminate powers in Oaxaca.
The UN's envoy, Jan Pronk, was expelled from Sudan after government anger at comments he made on his personal website. The government accused him of psychological warfare after he wrote that government forces had suffered two defeats in Darfur and that it had broken Security Council resolutions. The former Dutch cabinet minister is no stranger to controversy, but his use of the internet to publicize his views is new and daring in diplomacy, which traditionally favors discretion. This from the BBC.
And climate change could tilt the world's economy into the worst global recession in recent history, a report will warn next week. Sir Nicholas Stern, a former chief economist with the World Bank, is warning that the governments need to tackle the problem head-on by cutting emissions or face economic ruin. The contents of the Stern review of the economics of the climate change have been kept secret since the nature of the work was revealed to the world's environment ministers in Mexico this month. But Sir David King, the government's chief scientific advisor, yesterday gave The Guardian a preview of its main findings. The review will highlight the threat of sea level rise, Sir David said. If you look at the sea level rise alone, the impact will have on global economies where cities are becoming inundated by flooding. This will cause a displacement of hundreds of millions of people. The International Energy Agency predicts that $15 trillion of investment in new energy sources will be required over the next 15 years, this according to The Guardian.
The EU has put forward plans for procuring more uranium from Kazakhstan for Europe's nuclear industry. The EU's executive body has urged EU governments to agree to a deal worth $630 million to help boost uranium supplies from Kazakhstan. The deal will ease trade in uranium and increase joint work on nuclear safety, non-proliferation and research over the next 10 years. Kazakhstan has the world's fifth largest reserves of uranium. This from the BBC.
This has been the Cable Morning News for Thursday, October 26, 2006. Thanks for listening, and thanks for becoming a member of Cable. You make all the difference. Today's editor is Chris Andre, our engineer is Steve, and Kathleen Stevenson is a Cable AM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Brian Smith.
And I'm Chris Andre. We clear the air at 90.7 FM in Portland and Corvallis at 100.7 FM on translator K264AA. In Hood River at 91.9 FM on translator K220HR.
Portland area weather, mostly cloudy with a chance of light rain this morning, highs in the 60s. Tonight, partly cloudy, clear with patches of fog after midnight, lows in the mid-30s to low 40s.
So, now you're a member of KBOO. Now you can come in and volunteer in the KBOO AM newsroom. It's fun. Pick up the phone. Call Kathleen Stevenson at 503-231-8032, extension 202, or you can reach her by email at amnews@kboo.org.
And coming up on your listener-supported, volunteer-powered community radio later this morning.
Not much later, at 7:30, Joanne Bowman hosts Voices from the Edge Talk Radio. In the first part of the show, she'll speak with Tom Civiletti, a proponent of ballot measures 46 and 47.
And at 9 on Press Watch, Teresa Mitchell's guest is David Holtzman, author of Privacy Lost, How Technology is Endangering Your Privacy.
At 10, Mia Kim presents Radio Beyond Borders with a report on, quote, a century of Korean immigration to Oregon.
And at 10:30 on Art Focus, Julie's guests are Kelly, Alex, and Jonathan from the Portland Art Center.
And be sure to stay with us at 11. It's Democracy Now with Amy Goodman. Thank you for listening. Thank you for becoming a member. And don't forget to call that number if you're not a member. It's 503-232-8818. Have a good day.
The community calendar for Thursday, October 26th. The Northwest Film Center presents the Human Rights Film Series, showing now through November 9th. Cinema can be entertainment and escape, but for many committed filmmakers, its most compelling role is as a vital medium of information and powerful tool for social change. Tackling wide-ranging, thought-provoking issues, These filmmakers help deepen our awareness of the values of dignity, equality, and justice as they tell universal stories of human struggle, sacrifice, and triumph. Showings are at the Witzel Auditorium. That address is 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in downtown Portland. Visit their website for more information at nwfilm.org or call 503-221-1156, 503-221-1156. The Human Rights Film Series is sponsored by the First Unitarian Church, Stumpdown Coffee, Peaceful Response Coalition, First United Methodist Church, West Hills Friends, and the Mercy Corps. The Northwest Film Center, a component of the Portland Art Museum, provides a variety of film and video exhibition, education, and information programs. The Central Lutheran Church presents Peace, Propaganda, and the Promised Land, happening this Saturday, October 28th, from 7:30 to 9 p.m. at the Central Lutheran Church. That address is 1820 Northeast 21st Avenue in Portland. Peace, Propaganda, and the Promised Land is a moderated documentary film. Excerpts from this documentary film explain how the media contributes to America's skewed perception of the Palestinian-Israeli conflict. Diane Adkin, Global Exchange Visitor to Palestine and Israel and spokesperson for Americans United for Palestinian Human Rights, will moderate. The public is invited to this free event presented by Lutherans for Justice in the Holy Land and co-sponsored by Americans United for Palestinian Human Rights, Friends of Seville, and Jews for Global Justice. For more information, visit the web at centralportland.org or contact Central Lutheran Church. That number is 503-284-2331, 503-284-2331. And this has been the Community Calendar. I'm Alicia Olson for KVOO, listener-sponsored, volunteer-powered, non-corporate, commercial-free radio in Portland, Hood River, and Corvallis.
This KABU program is made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from the African American Alliance for Home Ownership and the Black United Fund of Oregon, presenting the 7th Annual African American Home Buying Fair, including over 40 home buying professionals and education workshops, Saturday, October 28th, 10 a.m. at the Emmanuel Hospital Atrium, 501 North Graham in Portland. Information at 503-595-3517 or aaah.org.
Music from Iran, Iraq, and Turkey will be performed live at Jammin' for Peace on Saturday, October 28th. Musicians from Iran and Iraq will be joined by Jewish American music from Iran, Iraq, and Turkey will be performed live at Jammin' for Peace on Saturday, October 28th. Musicians from Iran and Iraq will be joined by Jewish American musicians, all emphasizing that peace among peoples endures regardless of the government's warring interests. Musicians featured include Iraqi musician and composer Rahim Al-Haj, Iranian reed flute performer Hossein Bonumi, and Yanni Ses, a Seattle-based group of Turkish American musicians. Jammin' for Peace is happening on Saturday, October 28th, with music from Iran, Iraq, Turkey, and beyond. This all can be found at the First Congregational Church, located at 1126 Southwest Park Avenue in downtown Portland. Tickets are $15 for general admission and $10 for students. KABU is a proud co-sponsor of this event for peace.
Dr. Nine, I'm back.
Have you secured the media outlet for the 900 Club's inaugural broadcast, Schlichtenstein?
Yes, Doctor. Monday, October 30th at 11 p.m. on KBOO during a radio theater show called The Southern Radio Project.
Diminutive, damn it.
Ow!
Radio theater? Community radio? Monday night at 11? You might as well be answering the Barry Manilow Marathon.
But Doctor, if your nine wave can penetrate the cultured, independent minds of the KABU radio theater audience, listeners to enter PRCOM channel stations will be easy pickings.
You're right, Schlichtenstein. This is merely phase one of Plan 9 from Uber Space. The sudden radio broadcast on Monday, October 30th at 11 p.m. will make the Exorcist look like Pippi Longstockings. A Halloween horror show written, produced, and directed by...
Dr. Stein! the right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for the right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for the right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight.
Good morning, good morning. This is Joanne Bowman, and you're listening to Voices from the Edge. I have a wonderful, wonderful guest in the studio with me this morning, and we're going to be talking about two ballot measures that are on your ballot. And if you haven't voted yet, I would encourage you to pull out your voter's pamphlet so that we can talk about ballot measure 46 and 47. I have with me Tom Civiletti, who's a very well-known community activist. He's an activist with Clackamas Democratic Party, as well as with the Fair Elections Coalition in Oregon. And he has graciously agreed to be in the studio with me today so that we could talk about this. And it's kind of fun because I really like Tom Civiletti, and I'm glad he's here. So welcome to the studio, Tom.
Well, Joanne, thank you, and I really like you, too.
Oh, cool, cool. See, people are going to hear about this love fest, and they know that the campaign has been calling and emailing me every opportunity to tell me how wrong I am about my position on 46 and 47, and I jumped at the opportunity to have someone here in the studio today so we could actually have this conversation. So I appreciate you. You were the sacrificial lamb. You're the one they sent to me. Huh?
I'm the one who's willing to get up and be here. 7:30.
which in my mind gives you more brownie points, you know, you keep adding them up. So for individuals that want to call us and join in on the conversation, feel free to give us a call at 503-231-8187. And I should let you know that there's good news and bad news. As you may have thought, that the membership drive was over, and so you would tune in this week and I wouldn't be coming in begging for money. Well, bad news, it's not over. It's been extended, and it's been extended because we haven't reached our goals yet, but it's only been extended until noon tomorrow, which means that when we come back to you today and ask you to, like, open up your pocketbook and your wallet, you might as well just get it out of the way, because if you don't do that, then we may be back next week trying again to get some money out of your wallet, you know, because if we don't do it, if we don't get money from you, we don't get money. So we're going to have to do that because that's part of the price of being in business in this community. And plus, you love us and you want us here because you listen in all the time. So 503-231-8187. We'll come back a little bit later and talk about the pledge drive.
And Joanne, this is one thing we both definitely agree about. KBOO is a great radio station and a great community asset, and people should support it, because that's what keeps it on the air.
Absolutely true. Thank you so much. So see, we can start off in agreement. So why don't we just jump in the ballot measure 46, which is the constitutional change, right?
Yes.
Let's do that one real quick and get that one out of the way.
Yep.
Okay.
46 is one sentence.
Right.
It says, notwithstanding any other provision of the Constitution,
mm-hmm.
the people, through the initiative process or the legislative assembly, by a 3/4 vote of both houses, may enact and amend laws to prohibit or limit contributions and expenditures of any type or description to influence the outcome of any election.
Okay. And so my question on that, and I think I said the other day that I thought people should vote yes on this, but I actually don't think that, because my concern is this: the only way the legislature can enact campaign finance limits is with a supermajority vote of both houses, based on the writing of Measure 46.
That's correct.
To my recent knowledge, it's almost impossible to get a supermajority of both houses of the legislature to do anything. So if we say we want campaign finance reform, why would you tie the legislative's hands and make it so difficult for the legislature to be able to thoughtfully put in place a campaign finance reform measure?
Our main concern is that the legislature, as it's now constituted, mm-hmm. would gut the reforms in Measure 47, which is the companion measure. For instance, the Massachusetts legislature, and Massachusetts is quite a liberal state, repealed their entire voter-passed clean elections reform a couple of years ago. Also, in 1994, the voters of Colorado passed Amendment 27, which was actually a system fairly close to the close elections system. And both sessions since then, the legislature has tried to gut that one. We want to give this a chance to work and to improve the nature of the legislature before they throw it out.
So I see. So this measure basically is an assumption that 47 would pass.
Correct.
Okay. But if so, 47 doesn't pass, and you actually needed to have the, if 46 passed and 47 didn't, and you actually needed to go through a legislative process to implement campaign finance reform, then you've created this enormous hurdle that you'd have to jump over.
It would be a hurdle. Based on history, though, our assumption is that the legislature would never come up with comprehensive campaign finance reform and pass it. It's been discussed in the legislature, but it's never come close to fruition.
Okay, well, that answers my questions for 46. So, because that was the part that struck me when I was rereading this, was like, well, we can't get the legislature to do a supermajority vote on anything yet. Okay, so let's move right into the guts of the measure, Measure 47. And we don't have any callers, so I guess nobody has any questions on the actual constitutional change. And of course, wait, let me go back to 46 for just a minute. Now, one of the reasons why campaign finance reforms continue to be struck down is because Oregon's constitution prohibits limits on campaign contributions.
That's right. As a matter of fact, we passed some reforms quite similar to Measure 47 back in 1994, and it was declared unconstitutional by the Oregon Supreme Court as being in violation of Oregon's free speech protections. That's why Measure 46 exists.
Okay. So we'll get into 47, which will actually, I'm sure, raise some more questions about 46, but let's just jump into 47. Do you want to give our listening audience just kind of an overview of what 47 would do?
Well, 47, first of all, has three parts. The first part is findings, which
it's
is discussion. It's discussion about how the voters of Oregon perceive the political process and why we believe there needs to be reform.
Well, I did notice that there's almost three pages of conversations about previous elections, previous contributions to individual candidates, even talks a bit about Tom Potter running for mayor for the city of Portland. That's a lot of information that would go in the statute if this becomes law.
Well, there's a reason for it, Joanne, and that is that courts in the past, when they have ruled on campaign finance issues, have wanted to know what is the reason for doing this, and is there a compelling public interest? And so we are saying that if the voters pass 47, they are agreeing that this is the lay of the land politically, and this is why we are enacting campaign finance reform as a people.
Really? Okay. All right. So that's something the voters have to contemplate if they actually read through all this, which I actually did every single word, which I imagine most voters will not do just because it is a very lengthy measure. There's actually, the measure is like 2, 4, 6, 8 pages, 7.5 pages in the voter's pamphlet.
It is long. Of course, we have to realize that when you enact campaign finance reform, what you're doing to a large extent is plugging loopholes because money will try to find a place to come out. And if you look at the regulations on elections in Oregon, it's over 300 pages. So we're using less than a tenth of that to try to turn it from what I believe now is a corrupt system to one that actually supports democracy.
Yeah, I mean, this is a pretty bold statement to say that this act's purpose is to restore democracy. I mean, that's a huge statement to make.
And so it is.
But how does this measure in itself, that's an enormous burden for this measure to carry, that in and of itself is going to restore democracy in Oregon?
I think it will allow the people of Oregon to restore democracy by being able to make reasonable decisions on elections and not be overwhelmed by the kind of political advertising that we see today.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. I don't know what would be the best way for us to do this. I could tell you what some of my concerns are and have you respond to those.
That sounds good.
Or I could have you just try to give us an overview. The former rather than
well, let me start okay. with one point and what I think is the most most important part of this, and it is that it puts a limit of $0 on contributions from both corporations and unions. That's the number one biggest change right there.
Okay, so it eliminates corporations and unions' abilities to provide contributions
direct from their treasury. Yes.
Direct from the Treasury. Okay. But there is a mechanism in here that allows them to create, what do you call it? The
small donor committees.
Small donor committees that are limited to $50 and under contributions. But there is a maximum of $10,000. Is that right? Is it $10,000? Or is it $2,000 that can come from a union's? Wait. Okay. Let me go back and look.
Okay.
let me get those numbers right. Let's see.
There's a lot of provisions there.
And I have to say that this is really, really very confusing. So now I'm a political geek, so I read things, you know, thoroughly, and I got confused. And it looks like we've got a call on the line. But the question I was about to answer to ask had to do with one of those committees. Let's see.
While you're looking, the idea behind the small donor committee is to allow groups, for instance unions, that have a large member base and represent the interests of a lot of people, to be able to raise and spend money on campaigns, but to only take the money in small amounts so that money does represent the views of a lot of people.
Okay.
And say, for instance, you were a member of the communications union. You can not only start a small donor pack, you can start as many small donor packs as you want. You can start one for each candidate that you are endorsing. You can start one for each level of government that you're working in. So as long as your members or other people are willing to support that, you can raise a lot of money.
Okay, so let me ask this question, because this is the part that I think there's a terminology that's used in this measure that's called, let me take this call first and then I'll find it while the caller's on the line. Good morning, caller. Welcome to Cable. Hello? Hello, hello? Good morning. I guess I really don't have a caller. Good morning, caller. Welcome to Cable.
Hello?
Hi, welcome.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Oh, thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome.
The guest you have there is kind of touching on the answer to my question, but it's not in simple enough language.
Okay.
I'm reading the voter's pamphlet, and I'm having a problem with measures 46 and 47 because there's organizations that I believe in on both sides.
Yes.
And the one issue that I don't understand that keeps coming up is the whole thing about free speech.
Uh-huh.
But the librarians are, I can't remember which side they're on, but they're saying that, you know, passage of these measures, I guess, would inhibit free speech, and this whole notion of free speech keeps coming up.
Right.
And I think your guest is kind of touching on that, but I needed to explain in a little bit
more
simpler language. Why are they saying it inhibits free speech, and how are they wrong?
Thank you. That's a really good question.
Excellent question. Measure 46 affects free speech only in that the Oregon Supreme Court has said that the Oregon Constitution as it is equates speech with money and the protection of free speech with the protection of the use of money to communicate.
Okay.
We believe that that money actually has subverted democracy, and that groups or people who have large amounts of money to put into the political process use that to stifle the voice of everybody else.
Okay.
And that and 46 only affects free speech when we are calling free speech the ability to use as much money as you want in the political process.
So the smaller so-called interest groups who would typically not be able to raise as much money, like maybe the labor unions and those kind of groups. They're against it because maybe they usually have trouble raising money.
Well, I think the unions are against it for a different reason that I think we'll get into later. But as far as, for instance, the librarians, the librarians have adopted the position of the ACLU, American Civil Liberties Union. Now, I've been a member of the ACLU for decades, and they do a lot of good work. But I've always disagreed with their position that money equals speech in the political process.
That's actually wasn't their position, as the Oregon Supreme Court's position. Right?
Well, it's also been ACLU's, nationally, that they've argued for that. Even though the U.S. Supreme Court has said that it is possible to put limitations on political contributions, the ACLU has always argued that should be unconstitutional. And even though I love the organization, I disagree with them on that point.
Okay, well, I don't want to take up any more of your time.
Appreciate your question, though. It was a really good question, and thank you so much.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Bye.
There's one term that I would love to have you explain, and what is it's called political nonprofit organization, and it's defined as a nonprofit corporation or association which was formed for the express purpose of promoting political ideas, was not formed by one or more business entities or labor unions, cannot engage in business activities except those incidental to its political purpose. And then there's some more definitions, and I'm not going to read them all because there's about 7 or 8 of them under there. Based on the definition presented of political nonprofit organizations, an organization like the one I work for, Oregon Action, which is a organization that is a membership-based organization statewide that works with low-income people and people of color across the state. And part of our main purpose for existing is to educate low-income people and motivate and mobilize them to become active in the political arena, right? So based on what I know my organization does and based on the definition of political nonprofit organization, if Measure 47 passed, individuals would be limited to giving my organization no more than, depending upon how you read this, I think no more than $2,500 a year, but that would be inclusive of anything politically they did. So if I was an individual that wanted to give to a nonprofit and a couple of candidates, I'm limited to $2,500 as my maximum contribution that I can give to those purposes.
Not exactly. The $2,500 is for political contributions that go to candidate campaigns. It would not limit, for instance, my ability to give your organization $10,000 a year. But you could only use a limited amount of that directly in the political process to support a candidate within 30 or 60 days of an election. And there are several exceptions for that. And if you go back to the definitions section where it talks about what a contribution and expenditure is, it's under, let's see here, I, number 4, you'll find out, for instance, that any communication with the group's members is exempt from this. You can spend any amount you want on that. Any political activity whatsoever that is before 30 days before the primary election or 60 days before the general is exempted. You can spend whatever you want on that. Any activity that is not directly involved with supporting or opposing a candidate is exempted. You can spend anything you want on that. Any money that is spent on scorecards for candidates, for instance, is exempt. So there are many exemptions. The reason for putting limitations on nonprofit corporations is that, for instance, I'm a timber baron, and I run a big timber corporation. If nonprofits weren't included, I simply would start my own nonprofit, channel money from the for-profit corporation into the nonprofit corporation, and spend just as much money as I did last cycle.
Well, I don't agree with your assessment that that nonprofits are free to spend their money any way they want to based on how this measure is written. Because in one place in this measure, a campaign season is defined as election day up until the time that office is elected again. So it's untrue that they could, you know, that 30 days and 60 days before an election is the limit. Because if you read where it identifies what a campaign season is, you would always be in campaign season. So on November 9th, campaign season would start, and it wouldn't end until the next general election season. So you would never not be in campaign season.
Well, but the limits only operate in that 30 and 60 day window, though. Even if you say that campaigns are going on.
But the limits for contributions and how they can be received. So again, let's go back to a political nonprofit, which is certainly what I would call my organization. This is an organization that is always beating up on policymakers. So whether we're trying to push Senator Gordon Smith to do the right thing on prescription drugs, whether we're trying to push Senator Wyden to take a proactive stand on immigrant rights, whether we're trying to push the legislative body to pass a piece of legislation that would benefit low-income people, that activity is taking place throughout the year. It doesn't just happen the 30 and 60 days before election. We've got lots of callers lined up.
And there would be no limits on your ability to do that except in that 30 and 60-day window.
Well, actually, the limit is on the individuals who would choose to give to my organization, because they now have to decide if I'm limited to only give an X number of dollars per year politically across the board. Mm-hmm. Then I have to make a decision about whether I'm going to give to individual candidates, whether I'm going to give to political nonprofits, and so that arbitrary limit is for everything. It's not just for a political nonprofit or just for the candidate or just for ballot measures, but it's across the board. And so that's where I'm challenged by that.
Okay, we can talk about this.
Okay. All right. Good morning, caller. Welcome to Cable.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Joanne. How are you this morning?
I'm doing wonderfully well. How about you?
Very, very well. Just to digress just shortly here before 47, I just want to encourage all the cable listeners to vote yes on 43 to protect our daughters and girls from this evil torture of death that
I
we're experiencing.
I so disagree with you. There is no evil torture or death to which you're referring to.
I find it interesting that you have to get permission to give your daughter an aspirin, but she can go out and get and kill the baby in a room.
You know, I wonder if you would support a measure.
Would you
support a measure that would require grown men who slept with minor girls to go to jail indefinitely? Would you support that?
Most of these girls...
No, you didn't answer my question. If you have a child having sex with a grown man, would you support sending that grown man to jail?
Pardon me?
If a child, like you're talking about the 17, the 16,
yes.
17, and 18-year-old, was having sex with a grown man, would you support sending that grown man to jail?
Yes, I would.
Thank you. That's all I needed to know from you.
So
you would support...
jail, too, and all the cable listeners in jail.
Well, you are a wonderful man. Have a great day.
You know what?
Thanks for the call. Bye now. You're listening to KBOO Portland. Good morning, caller. Welcome to Cable.
Oh, yeah. Hi.
Hi.
The woman who called a few minutes ago about the free speech question, yes, but I think maybe that question wasn't completely answered because I've been reading the voters pamphlet too. Boy, is that really confusing.
Isn't it?
And there are groups on both sides, but when I looked at the groups that were against this, I had to really read that carefully. Why are they against it? They're all talking about free speech.
Mm-hmm.
And what, if I understand this correctly, they're talking about not just that the Oregon Supreme Court has interpreted giving money as a form of free speech. That's not the issue they're concerned about, although that's a concern too.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it something about limiting your free speech in the sense that anyone, they're considering someone coming out like an artist writing a song or writing an artist or a musician creating anything for that candidate would be considered a contribution to the campaign, and they'd be limiting that. Is that why they're concerned about free speech?
I'm sorry, I missed your last point. Would you repeat your last sentence?
Is the concern about free speech the idea that an artist or anyone simply speaking for the candidate or creating any body of work for the candidate, would that be considered a form of campaign contribution?
It sounds like yes, it would be if it was over. I mean, if the value of it was over $50.
We're talking about value here. Mm-hmm. If, for instance, if I produced a song and put it out in the public and used my music company to do it, that would be a kind of political contribution if it happened within 30 days before a primary or 60 days before a general. For instance, it would cover political jingles, which could be considered artistic expression, but they're very much parts of political campaigns the campaigns spend a lot of money for.
Hmm. So is that the concern of the free speech?
Well, I think that there's a lot of different concerns that people have. If you know, as you said, as you've been looking through the voters pamphlet, I agree with you. The interesting thing is that there are quote-unquote progressives on both sides of this issue, right? And there's a lot of talk about protecting your right to free speech, or the fear that someone who's independently wealthy can totally just ignore all these stopgaps, right? Because if I'm a millionaire and I decide, okay, I want to run for office, but I don't want to operate under this system, then you never set up a PAC. You just run your own. You finance your own campaign for office. And that's the piece that I keep hearing from other progressive groups, is that their concern is that with this measure, if you've already got a lot of money, this measure is meaningless because you could just finance your own campaign and not worry about it.
Well, actually, there are specific requirements in 47 which say that you are limited in putting your own money into a campaign.
Well, and that's the part that I'm pretty convinced will not be held up by the courts, because how is anybody going to tell somebody how they can spend their own personal money?
Of course, there are several states right now that already are enforcing just that kind of limitation, and the courts have not only not overturned them, they haven't accepted cases to consider that question.
But this has been like one of those core questions for Oregon Supreme Court.
My feeling is, and I'm not talking about you personally,
Jay,
that the campaign against fair elections, measures 46 and 47, has been quite dishonest. Let me read something pretty short to you that I think might illustrate this. Here is quotations from a person who is against campaign finance reform. It's poorly crafted and full of unintended consequences. Experts believe it could give more power to the corporations while limiting the union's participation in politics. Legal experts believe that the initiative's restrictions on corporations are illegal and could be thrown out, leaving the unions with the restrictions, and that it could unfairly limit our voices on critical issues. Now, these are the kind of arguments that the opponents of 46 and 47 are using. But the quotations I just gave are from Mike Mislinski, who is a spokesman for the California Teachers Association, who is opposing Proposition 89 in California this year. And 89 is public financing or clean elections. So the same statements are being used to oppose public financing that are being used in California, that are being used here in Oregon to oppose fair elections. And I think that's because they did focus groups and found out this is the kind of language that you use to scare people away from supporting campaign finance reform in general. It doesn't really have anything to do with the particular measures themselves.
Did that answer your question? Do we help?
Do we
help illuminate? Not that much. Okay, well,
thanks a lot.
You're welcome, but keep listening. Hopefully, as we get more into this conversation, we'll be able to help clarify it for you.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Have a great day. So let's check in with Membership Central and find out from Matt and Abe. How are you, Matt and Abe?
We're doing good out here, and we've got a couple of people who have called in and subscribed. Do you have their names over there?
That's so fabulous.
I do.
Thank you, Brian from Portland and James from Boring. We appreciate you joining the KBOO family, but we're going to need some more folks. 503-232-8818 is the number to call. From outside the metro area, 1-877-500-KBOO. Now, I'm going to go ahead and make an unqualified statement here. The discussion you're hearing right now on Joanne's show, this sort of minute dissection of the issues around a ballot measure is something you're simply not going to hear anywhere else on the dial, anywhere, period. And if that means something to you, if that's valuable to you, put your money where your ears are right now. Pick up the phone, 503-232-8818, and become a member of KBOO.
And part of what's making this work is that we don't have to take a breakout for commercials, even though today we are doing this for the pledge drive. But normally, the conversation goes, and we can follow the conversation so that you can get an idea out. And you can't just get an idea out with just a couple of sentences or a two-word soundbite. And this is what KBOO has been doing for quite a long time. Now, there's been some commercial stations that have started to do it, but KBOO has been doing this for, since the last century, we can say that, and beyond that.
Last millennium.
Right. Yeah. And so only been able to do it with your support. And so by calling in, this is what you support for each week and every day here at KBOO. And we need your help this time. So call us up if you're $40, $60. For $120, in fact, we will give you a three-book trifecta. What are those books that we are offering right here?
They are How to Steal an Election by David Moore, Brave New Ballot, This Battle to Safeguard Democracy in the Age of Electronic Voting, and Bob Fetrakis's What Happened in Ohio.
And we're not offering those individually. You subscribe for $120, you get all three, count them. And that's not all. You get KBOO as well every day here at 90.7 FM. So call us up, 503-232-8818, and become a subscriber to Listener Supported Radio. Now, outside Portland, it's
1-877-500-KBOO. So we gotcha, really. You can't beg off saying, well, I didn't want to make a long-distance call, because it's not a long-distance call. And if you're at work right now, if the man's looking over your shoulder, you can log on to one of the internets, www.kboo.fm. You can make a pledge right from the privacy of your office. He'll never even know. And then you can pat yourself on the back the rest of the day. 503-232-8818.
There's someone that knows it, the man right there, calling us up. We want you to call up too, 503-232-8818. So what, just finally, what are we going to do with this measure? 46, 47, what do you suggest?
You're talking to us? Oh, us.
Yes.
Well, Tom hasn't changed my mind yet, but we've got a little bit more time. He's working on me. I actually think that this is the kind of deliberation that voters are doing all over the state right now.
Yeah.
And they're trying to figure out whether or not they should support all the ballot measures that are on the ballot.
And it's mainly trying to get your head around it to understand what is this actually about, who is this serving, who is this going to be against.
Exactly.
And trying to understand that.
That's always the way I make decisions. It's always, okay, who's for it, who's against it.
What does it mean? Yeah.
What happens in the real world when you try to implement it, Because you can have great ideas and great sound bites, but if you can't implement it well, then is it good for the state?
Exactly. And if we're talking about, which we are, with at least one of these measures, amending the Constitution, that's something that absolutely requires careful deliberation. And you're hearing it on this station as we speak. And that's, as I said earlier, something you're simply not going to find anywhere else. And I think we need to give credit to Joanne this morning for having somebody on her show who opposes her viewpoint and being willing not only to have his views go out on the air, but to entertain them and take them into consideration herself. So hats off to you, Joanne, for some good radio this morning.
But I think we should protect our daughters and vote no on that.
But now we digress. Yes. I absolutely agree with you. And, it's so wonderful when I run into KBOO listeners out in the community. I run into them in the grocery stores, at the library, at Powell's Books. They're all over the place. They talk about how much they enjoy this station. I want to encourage them, if you enjoy any part of this station at any time during your work week, now's the time for you to make an investment. make an investment to make sure that we can continue to bring you these kind of programs and other kind of programs that you cannot get anywhere else. Cable is the one-stop place for that to take place.
So once again, the number 503-232-8818 and outside the Portland area.
It's 1-877-500-KBOO. And there's something else you should keep in mind, too. There is a whole network of enlightened business owners all over this town who also support Cable and also listen to what we have here on the air. And those people will extend to you membership benefits. They will give you discounts on valuable goods and services at establishments all over town. So, really, there's more in it for you than simply what's coming out of your speakers. 503-232-8818. If you join today, you can become a member of the extended, enlightened Cable community, and some of that mojo will rub off, I guarantee it.
So those businesses, you got to give them the secret Cable handshake.
That's right, and the password.
Oh, work. Exactly.
And we won't tell you that until you call up and make a pledge.
Right. 232-8818 here in the Portland area, 503 area.
That's right.
Code.
And for a single pledge of $100,000, we'll give you the double secret password. That will get you into places I can't even talk about.
Oh, man.
I think it's going to be that next caller, right?
That's right. That's what we want. That's what we want. So we want you to give us a call down here. We can only keep it going with your support. And that's the way we've been doing it for years down here. And we want to keep on doing it. You want to wake up in the morning. You want to hear this sort of programming. You want to tune in late at night and hear something that you haven't heard before. You want to tune in my program and hear a good story, Gremlin Time, third Monday of every month at 11 p.m., the bedtime radio show for grown-ups. Give us a call, 503-232-8818.
Or outside the area, 1-877-500-KBOO. Joanne, back to you.
Excellent. We'll check back in with Membership Central in a little while. I appreciate our callers waiting while we went to our membership break. So let's go back to the phone line and find out what's on our caller's mind. Good morning, caller. Welcome to Cable.
Hello.
Hi.
Yes, of course I support campaign finance reform, but I think I'm having a couple of little problems with Measure 47. And maybe your caller can alleviate them. The first, just in the way it's written, it seems to assume that unions and corporations contribute in the same amount and have the same amount of political power, which I think is a false assumption just based on the numbers of dollars that are contributed by the respective organizations. And I think to ban them both outright to levels of zero is a mistake. Because it's still, as you've talked about before, the measure still allows individual contributions, which to me basically means that instead of the corporations contributing any amount, all of their very wealthy executives will just contribute. And the problem is that unions don't have as wealthy of members to contribute in the same amounts. So I see it as somewhat of a stranglehold on the rank and file of union membership that doesn't really exist with the
corporation. You raise a very good question, and I'm going to give Tom an opportunity to respond to that, and then your question raised a question for me. So first I'll let Tom respond to your
question. Okay, very, very good question. The truth of the matter is that people who wrote and who are supporting fair elections are very much in support of unions. And we believe that the way that Measure 47 is written, unions actually will do quite well. You're correct that, of course, corporations outspend unions, about 5-1 right now. Our belief is that the small donor committees that are in Measure 47 will be very useful to unions because unions have a large member base. And that with just a small change in the way that bookkeeping is done, unions will actually be able to put as much or possibly more money into the political process than corporations are. Now, as far as individuals, there are also limits on individuals in 47. We believe that corporations, on the other hand, will not be able to very effectively use the small donor committees because I don't think they're going to be able to talk many of their shareholders or many of their employees into giving money to these PACs. Now, they will get their executives to give $50, but there aren't that many executives of corporations. But there are many members of unions. Also in 47, some of the dues money that union members paid, 40%, as a matter of fact, can directly go into these small donor PACs. So to some extent, the system is already set up so that unions will be able to use the small donor PACs. Our feeling is that when when the adjustments are made, that in the balance of things, the unions will gain quite a bit on what their power is now relative to the corporations under the no-limit system.
Well, you know, when the gentleman asked the questions about corporations versus unions, my first election to the legislature was under the campaign finance reform limit, with the $100 limit from individuals, no corporate money, and PACs could give were limited as well to $100 contributions. But what happened during my initial campaign was I realized that a couple of times during the campaign, I would get one envelope in the mail with 6 to 10 checks for $100 from individuals, right? Now, as a aware candidate for office, to me, it appeared to be a little less than legal, right? Because, you know, we were under this $100 cap, and I thought, so why would I get 8 to 10 checks in the mail, all with the limit, all from some company, right? Unless they were doing something to encourage, you know, folks to actually write individual checks and send it in. I actually sent all those packets of checks back because I wasn't comfortable that they actually had used the system as intended, right? And you know, some of my colleagues didn't. And I know we had a lot of debates about that, but clearly, my point is that corporations and folks with the assumption that they're going to have a lot of influence over the process will find a way around the system.
Well, that's one of the reasons that there are some pretty strong sanctions in Measure 47.
Oh yeah, we haven't gotten to the sanctions yet.
And complaints can be brought by anyone. So, for instance, say a corporation says, well, you know, we're going to get around this. We're going to have a small donor pack, and we're going to make sure that every one of our employees gives $50. Because if they don't, well, all needs to happen is for an employee or two to make a complaint to the elections division.
Right.
And that corporation can be fined quite heavily, and believe me, they won't take the chance.
Now, let's talk a bit about the penalties, because the penalties are severe, and it also says that any individual can file a complaint. The Secretary of State's office is required to investigate that complaint within 15 days, and then required to have a final decision 15 days after the hearing itself. Fines could be up to $50,000. If I'm in a politically very hotly contested race, I could see very easily going to the Secretary of State and complaining that I think that my opponent is doing something underhanded and not following the rules. That would be an excellent strategy to take their mind off the election and have them fighting with the Secretary of State's office before the election came up. So that would be one concern I would have. It's like when you say any person may file a complaint, any person should not have standing. I think that's so broad that it would be very easy for that to be taken advantage of.
Well, the example I just gave you about
the employee
of the corporation.
Right.
The problem we have now, we do have a lot of rules in elections, but the enforcement is so lax that many campaigns break the rules, and there is no sanction. And if there's any sanction, it's after the election, and we never have seen an election reversed because someone broke the rules big time.
Right.
47 is meant to be followed, and we believe that it will be followed, and that the system will be cleaned up. And the only way to do that is to have real sanctions against people who try to break the rules and try to get illegal money into the campaigns to affect the outcome of elections.
But there's no... So if I'm the person that's trying to prevent my candidate from being successful, there's no penalty for me if I falsely suggest that my candidate is involved in underhanded tricks and they have to spend all their time responding to those complaints. Because I could see a campaign, I mean, like our governor's race now, right? If this is in place now, I could see candidates for governor every day going to the Secretary of State's office with their campaign allies making accusations against the other side.
Well, there are already laws on the books, Joanne, against fraud, against defamation of character.
So that seem to be working with our with our political
with our
process.
Political process. Of course, now under the present system, it's possible to make complaints in campaigns. The difference now is that nothing ever gets done. We think things should be done.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. I'm talking to Tom Civiletti. He is an activist with Clackamas Democratic Party. He's also with Fair Elections Oregon. We're talking about Measure 46 and 47. 46 is the constitutional change that would allow campaign finance reform measures to be enacted. Measure 47 is a proposal to implement a rigid, stringent campaign finance system for elections. One question that keeps popping up for me is, based on the language, I know part of what you're trying to do is to impact candidates, but does this also impact ballot measures?
47 has no effect on ballot measure campaigns. There have been several court rulings, federal court rulings, saying that there can be no rules on ballot measure campaigns. And so in writing 47, we decided to stay away from that. It could be the subject of a ballot measure in the future if we decide to try to test the court rulings and see if they'll change their mind.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, this only covers candidate campaigns.
So in this... So this particular measure, Measure 47, says that an individual may make only the following contributions, right? So this is the part that I think that I struggle with, because I'm trying to get my head around how this could possibly be a reality. So an individual may make only the following contributions during an election period, which you define as the day after election day up until the next election day.
No. For the purpose of contributions and expenditures, it is 30 days before a primary and 60 days before a general.
So why do you identify? I'm confused then.
It depends on, it's a difference between when the contribution is made and when the expenditure is made. As far as the contribution, yes, it goes year-round. Just because it's January doesn't mean that I can give, say, Wayne Scott's campaign $25,000. No, I would not be allowed. But your group as a nonprofit group would be able to make expenditures outside of that 30-day and 60-day window of unlimited amounts. You would not be covered. And the reason it works that way is because in the definitions section, what it says is contribution and expenditure do not include, and then it gives a list of things that are not considered contributions or expenditures. So even though someone gives money to your organization, because, for instance, you're using that to communicate with your members, it is not, for the purpose of Measure 47, a contribution. It's right here under, again, I-4 in the definition section.
Okay.
Go to the next page.
So, and so you're saying that, no, that would not... So, but see, here's where I'm confused. So, I'm a political nonprofit, right? We have members. Our members give money. We would have to create another accounting system in order to accommodate this 30 or 60 day prohibition.
Yes. You would have to account for the money that you spend directly on candidate campaigns within those 30 and 60 day windows, and does not include either scorecards or communication with your members.
Mm.
If, for instance, if you pay for a television ad, yes, you have to account for that.
503-231-8187 is the number to call. I'm talking to Tom Civiletti. And it looks like we're going to head back over to membership. Didn't we just leave membership central just 2 minutes ago?
You've had such an amazing conversation going on
there. I guess we're having too much fun. I didn't realize it was time to come back.
And, you know, that's what it's all about here at KBOO, you know, having fun. And just having we're spreading a little mental itching powder this morning by talking about the Measures 46.
You know, only at KBOO are the pledge drives entertaining in themselves.
That's right. Never know what to expect here.
Well, we want to thank Mike from Portland for calling in and renewing his membership. We love it when members call up and renew, but we love it even more when newbies come along and take the plunge for the first time. So do that. If you're listening out there and you haven't yet made that step, do it. 503-232-8818. You won't regret it in the morning, I promise. 1-877-500-KBOO if you're outside the area.
These are all the ones.
Now, we don't usually interrupt the programming like this, but we do a couple times a year to do our pledge drives because this is listener-supported radio, and most of the operating funds we get here at the station come from you, our listeners, who call in at this time or at any time of the year to a basic $40 subscription. We also have we can take it out of your account. We can make installment payments. We have a number of different payment plans that we can work out when you call us up down here at 503-232-8818. But mainly, we need you to call. And we need you to give your support to this type of radio that is unique in this area, that we've had this conversation that's going on, and it's just gone on in its own time. We don't have to we got to take a break now and go to something else. I mean, this is unique that we do the pledge drives like this, but normally we just have talk, and we just have ideas coming out and people asking questions, and that's what listener-supported radio is all about here at KBOO.
I'd like to take this opportunity to thank Noah's Bagels on Southeast Hawthorne, Paragon on Northwest Hoyt, and Bamboo Grove on Southwest Carolina for fueling us volunteers this morning with their
That was yesterday.
Food? Yesterday. Oh, my goodness.
Well, they're helping us out here, and so you should give us a help, too, here. At, for those outside the Portland area, 1-877-500-5266 is the number to call if you're in Southwest Washington or out in other parts of Oregon, and to call us up down here and give your support to our community radio.
And if you're sitting at your desk and you're logged on, try it right now, www.kboo.fm. You can make a pledge quickly, easily. You won't even have to talk to anyone if you're shy. It's the way to go, really, if you're a bit of a recluse. You can still be part of the family. 503-232-8818 is the number to call. And really, all we're asking here is that you give back a little bit to the radio station that helps make your life more rich with the variety of news and public affairs programming that you hear every day on KBOO, with the incredible scope of music that you hear during the rest of the day on KBOO. Really, there's a little something for everyone. So we're asking all of you right now to reach in your pocket, dig a little bit deeper. We'll take whatever you can give. We're not asking for you to break the bank today. A $5 a month pledge adds up to only $60 a year. You won't even notice. That's just one less latte every week.
No, but that's worth the price for the type of radio that you get here at Community Radio KBOO Portland. We have an offer this morning, three-book trifecta offer.
That's right. How to Steal an Election by David Moore. The story of how George Bush's brother and Fox Network miscalled the 2000 election and changed the course of history. We've also got Brave New Ballot, The Battle to Safeguard Democracy in the Age of Electronic Voting, and also What Happened in Ohio by Bob Petrakis, the story of how they stole yet another election in 2004. All of these help make you a well-informed voter, as does listening to KBOO.
So for a $120 subscription to KBOO, you get not one, not two, but all three of those books for $120 if you call us up right here at 503-232-8818.
Or 1-877-500-KBOO if you're in the outlying areas. If you're in St. Helens, we want to hear from you this morning. If you're in the Dalles, if you're somewhere else up the Gorge, we want to hear from you. Hood River, if you're down the valley in Corvallis and Eugene, we want to hear from you too. Really everywhere within the sound of my voice, we need your help. We're extending this pledge drive because we have just a little bit farther to go. So reach down right now and help us reach our goal. 503-232-8818, 1-877-500-KBOO.
So are we ready?
Yes.
Excellent. Thank you so much. I appreciate you gentlemen volunteering your time this morning to come in and pitch for the program. and I'm hopeful that we're going to be hearing those phones ringing off the hook.
That's what we're hoping too, yes.
We're hoping, so we're going to give them the number one more time, and then we'll come and check in and see how great folks have been.
Okay, 503-232-8818. You live in the Portland area. That is the number we want you to call, 232-8818.
You know, we're just going to keep it going here. We're having so much fun. We need your help. That's what it comes down to. You think we get money from corporations?
No.
Do you think the government helps us out? No. We depend on you, the viewers, and while that might make things a little bit difficult around here sometimes, that's also what makes things great around here every single day. This is your radio station. If you call up and make a pledge, then you become part of it. You become part of the radio station that differentiates Portland, that differentiates you from the rest of Portland. 503-232-8818 is the number to call.
Yes, and we're trying to make an $800 goal this morning. We've got $160, so we need you to give us a call. We have a little bit over $600 that we got to make up for this morning's goal. So we'd like you to get on the phone and give us a call down here and do your bit to help keep community radio on the air with by calling 503-232-8818 for your support.
Yeah, it's really, it's not too difficult. You know, if you want to walk down, actually, and take a look at how things work down here, you can bring a pledge in. We're at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. That's just south of Burnside. You can come and view the incredibly attractive cadre of phone-answering volunteers we have here today. You can soak in the glory. You can look around and bask in the radiance that is Cable, and then walk away with some of that sticking to you because you just became a member. 503-232-8818.
Yes, we will give you a free tour if you'd like, if you come down here to our secret world headquarters at at 8th and East Burnside. Here.
One of the best kept secrets in town, right? Yeah.
It seems like it, but no, there's a lot of people that listen, and you know, you see the bumper stickers all over town and people who listen all the time. Some people, you know, they just love the variety of just keeping the radio on, and you don't know what you're going to hear next sometimes. And sometimes you do know what you're going to hear, and that's why you're listening.
Right.
So give us a call at 1-877-500-5266. If you haven't subscribed before, this is the time that we need your help, and we'd like you to give us a call down here.
It's actually those times when you don't know what you're going to hear that are the most fun around here, believe me. 503-232-8818. If you're online, www.kboo.fm. And Joanne, back to you.
Oh, thank you so much, gentlemen. Appreciate all your help this morning. And I just know, I feel that our listening audience is now fully awake because Tom and I have woke them up, and now they're going to head to the telephone and make that contribution today. We've got lots of callers on the line, so let's just zoom back into the phone line. Good morning, caller. Welcome to Cable. Hello? Good morning, caller. Going once, twice? Good morning, caller. Welcome to Cable. Good morning.
Oh, thank you so much, gentlemen. Appreciate all your help this morning, and I just know, I feel that our listening audience is now fully awake.
Good morning.
And I woke them up, and now they're going to head to the telephone and make that contribution today.
Okay, well, why don't we just jump back into one of my questions was, with Measure 47, it says that within 60 days after the close of an election cycle, the unexpended funds in a candidate committee at the close of the election cycle is reverted to the state of Oregon. So the money goes to the state of Oregon. They're not quite sure where it goes in the state of Oregon.
Yeah, tell me where that is, Joe.
It is actually on page 130 of the voters pamphlet. Oh, what section area? It's under the... Oh, let's see. Trying to figure out what I don't even see a title for this section. It's section C under requiring an employer or contractor to make a contribution or expenditures to support or oppose a candidate.
The money after goes to
so it's like, yeah, 60 days after the close of the election cycle for the office sought, the unexpended funds of a candidate committee at the close of the election cycle for the office sought shall revert to the state of Oregon to offset the cost of producing the voter's pamphlet. Okay, so it must go to the Secretary of State's office.
The idea would be to prevent the carrying over of large amounts of money. And of course, we know what happens now. For instance, the legislative caucus leaders raise large amounts of money and then use that to make contributions to candidate to keep them in line, so that the leadership gets reelected as speaker or president of the Senate in the next term. And again, we believe that is corrosive of democracy.
Well, you know, I appreciate your willingness to actually walk through the individual pieces, but I think there's some big picture pieces that we should be talking about, right? Because I can just see the listening audience eyes glazing over because we're talking ballot measure language. Right?
Minutia, yes.
Right. Rather than really, what's the big picture here? Why are we doing this? And why are so many progressives on the other side of this issue? I mean, and me included, right? I'm someone that's been a big fan of campaign finance reform. I like campaign limits. I like the ability of regular people to run and serve in public office. You know, I did a lot of work with the city of Portland to pass the voter-owned election system there. So it's part of me. It's part of my core. But this issue, this particular measures, 46 and 47, really trouble me because they appears so complex that it seems like a full...
I think almost all progressives would agree that corporations and rich individuals have way too much power in the political process. Fair elections measures 46 and 47 are an attempt to do something about this. They're complex because they seek to control money going into the process. And because we know from the past that there are many loopholes that money can try to get out through, and what 47 does is close all the loopholes that we've ever heard of.
Well, the measure certainly looks like it's trying to think of every eventuality and trying to write a response to every what if.
Correct.
Which is probably what makes it so confusing, because as you read through it, you realize that's exactly what I realized. I realized that what the Jordan is trying to anticipate somebody not using the system as intended. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of language about what happens if one part is struck down, then then you increase the conflict until it matches. I don't want to get into that because that talk about really complex language. So for me, I believe in campaign finance limits. I want the opportunity for average citizens to be able to run for office, right? That's my bottom line, and I'll be very out there with that. I don't think this measure is the way that we're going to get there, though. I think that this measure, because of how complex it is, I mean, that for me, that's one reason. So I want to ask the question, it would have been great, and I had asked this question before, no one's answered it. Why aren't you talking to people who've actually served in office, like before we put this on the ballot, right? Mm-hmm. It would have been great to have talked to folks who served under the old campaign finance reform system so that they could talk about what worked, what didn't work. I know for a fact that from my own experience, the arbitrary limit for the primary and the general that was in place at that time was extremely arbitrary, and it didn't make sense because, as you know, depending upon what part of the state you're in, your race is either in the primary or it's in the general, right? And so if there's an arbitrary limit that just says for the primary you only use X, you can only use X number of dollars, but you actually have a race in the primary where more money would make more sense, then under the old system, you didn't have any flexibility at all. This system, is there a maximum amount that candidates can raise?
There is not.
There isn't.
The limits are only on contributions coming into the system.
Okay, so, but no limit on the maximum number of contributions that a candidate could theoretically raise as much money just in $50 increments.
Correct.
Okay, to the phone line. Good morning, caller. Welcome to cable.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Appreciate your show.
Thank you.
A point and a couple questions. The free speech equals money constitutional argument. If you take that out to an extension of something as an analogy, think of you, Joanne, standing on the corner downtown, and you have an opinion and you're speaking it.
Right.
And you get a certain range, let's say 30 feet, people can hear you.
Right.
Then some fat cat comes in, has the same right of free speech as you, but he brings an amplifier and two 20-foot speakers.
Right.
Money is an amplifier. You both have equal speech, but with an extra $1 million, you can afford to speak louder and reach more people.
Right.
And in that way, it's actually unequal. So that's why we have the right as people to exercise campaign finance reform, which is basically saying everyone can stand on the corner and shout, but they have to be equal. No amplifier effect through money. So on to the issue. I'm actually very disappointed in your position, and I would like for you to actually ask more concrete questions as opposed to just having a continuous stream of negative opinions without actually trying to do some additional fact-finding.
So have you been listening to the whole show?
I've listened to the whole show.
And you believe that the whole show, all I've been doing is making negative remarks about the measure?
Well, look, you said your opinion isn't changed. And really, it's the audience out there that counts. And so I really have a question for them, because it doesn't look like you're going to change your opinion, because you've made up your mind already that somehow it's going to hurt Oregon Action, your nonprofit. And I'm a member of two nonprofits, and I not only see this not as a problem, that campaign finance reform will be more helpful, because major corporations that often defeat measures through millions of dollars, often out of state or even international cash, such as the GMO measure, that those folks will be diminished in power, and local organizations such as Oregon Action and other nonprofits are actually going to rise in power because of this, because the playing field will be more equal. So a question for your guest, Tom.
Real quick.
Well, the question is, Tom, why don't you tell folks about the Open Sunshine, the reporting requirements, which is really, I think, the heart of all this. We're talking about the money. Let's talk about how people have to report what they give and how people can actually research and find those names.
Thank you for bringing that up, because that is one of the issues that really troubles me in this measure, but we'll talk about that in just a second. First, I want to talk about what's coming up today on cable at 9 on Press Watch. Teresa Mitchell's guest is David Holtzman, author of Privacy Lost, How Technology is Endangering Your Privacy. At 10, it's Video Beyond Borders with a report on a century of Korean immigration to Oregon. And at 10:30 on Arts Focus, Julie's guests are Kelly, Alex, and Jonathan from the Portland Arts Center. And at 11 is Democracy Now! That's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. So, Tom, the caller raised actually a good question after he finished telling me about myself. His good question, which is about the tracking system. You, if you are someone who gives more than $500 in a calendar year,
correct,
then you would be required to get a tracking number from the Secretary of State's office, and they would publish it on the website for your contributions to whoever you give your contributions to throughout the year.
Right. Now, the idea here, again, is to be able to keep track of the money going in so the rules are followed. Everyone who is registered to vote in Oregon already has a tracking number. It's your voter registration number. The only people who would have to go through another process to get a number would be either people who are not registered to vote or people who are from out of Oregon. Now, my feeling is that if those people want to put money into the political process, but they don't vote in Oregon, they're putting another small hurdle in applying for a tracking number really isn't an undue requirement. But as far as the rest of us, we already have a number. It would be very easy for the Secretary of State to use those voter registration numbers as the tracking numbers.
Well, we may have a number, but we're not publicizing how people give their individual contributions to whatever, right? So you're right. I mean, it's because we have a statewide voter file, you actually have a number. But the significant difference, right, is what you're saying is once you get past a certain amount, now you're published on the website and all your contributions are listed. I mean, I don't,
correct,
right?
Now, the information is already public information. The problem is that now a person would have to go to the elections division and purchase and going through hundreds or thousands of pages of CNE reports to find who gave how much to what.
Right.
Well, when it's on a website, it will be very simple to track, and that, of course, is what we need to be able to make sure that people are following the rules.
Okay. You know, we're going to go back to Pledge Central, and we're going to be there for the remainder of the program. So I'm going to give you an opportunity to give me a last final comment before we move back to, is that right? Okay. He's looking at me.
Yeah, go ahead. Wrap it up.
So I was just making sure. And so I don't want you to leave without having an opportunity to just make your 30-second statement about why you think folks should support.
First of all, I think you've been very fair and open in this conversation.
Thank you.
Measures 46 and 47, fair elections, ballot measures, I believe are very important for Oregon because democracy is having a hard time in our political process. Corporations have way too much power. 46 and 47 would put a stop to that, would give the people of Oregon much more power over the political process, and I believe would lead to much more progressive state government, so that things like education, the environment, human services would be much better funded and much better taken care of, and sweetheart deals for corporations would be a thing of the past.
I hope you're right. Thank you so much for being here, Tom. It's been a pleasure, and it's always a pleasure to see you, and thank you for the incredible work you do out in the local community.
And I love you, and I love Cable.
Thank you so much. Have a fabulous day. And we're going to head back over to Membership Central, and they're going to tell me we have been just inundated with telephone calls of folks who have just been just writing out those checks, doing those pledges. That's what you're going to tell me, right?
We have had one call from Judy. No. Judy has called us up, and she's renewed her membership.
Yay, Judy.
Out there in Portland. Judy here in Portland. Thanks for calling us up. And every little bit helps. We've got to do it bit by bit.
That's true.
And we want you to call us up here, 503-232-8818. And give us your support for the type of shows that we're doing right now, the kind of conversations, uninterrupted conversations that we have to give points of view out so that you can make up your mind, especially at this crucial election that we've got coming down on us.
That we're voting on right now. Yeah, and for, you know, it's like my ballot came last Friday, and last Saturday I filled it out, and by golly, it's turned in. And I love vote by mail. I just so love vote by mail.
Yeah, and the ads come on TV, and you're like, I've already done it.
I did it. Well, and plus, for me, it's like about avoiding the phone calls, right? The every 2-minute phone calls. Are you going to vote for this, or vote yes on this, vote no on that, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, I wanted to take a moment and say, today is an example of those kind of programs that I hope we do more and more of, which is, I think it's wonderful for us to have programs where we have good people that disagree about not the issue, but it's about the implementation, right? Because like Tom Civiletti and I have both been fans of campaign finance reform for a lot of years. And, you know, as always, the devil's always in the detail about how you move forward and make something happen. I love these kind of programs, and I hope the last caller didn't take it as somehow I'm mad with Tom or I don't want Tom's viewpoint out there. The reality is that we have to have both sides. We have to have thinking people on both sides making the case for why this is good or bad for our state.
And being able to make their case, and that's the important thing which helped. One of the main things that are set up here at Cable is that we can get in and we can talk and make the point, and we're not rushed to meet some sort of deadline where we have to come off and something totally different it comes your way that distracts you from what they're being talked about, is that we can bring the issues up and we can discuss them, we can discuss both sides. I mean, yes, very many of the things here have a progressive side, but we also want to hear from other sides that we bring in and conservative sides, just, you know, to get the point of view out for our listeners to make up their own minds about what they want to do. You know, is it too complicated? Is it not too complicated? Is this the way that we're going to resolve this issue of campaign finance reform? That's what we've been doing this morning by having a discussion about it and letting you, our listeners, decide, and which we do every week, every day here at Cable. We have people who come in who want to be on the radio and want to express themselves to you, and we're able to do that with your support by people calling in like we want you to do right now. And the people that we've had call in this morning at 503-232-8818, and it's very important, and we want you to call right now.
Yeah, that's right. 1-877-500-KBOO. That's 5266 if you're outside the Portland area. And Joanne, you're absolutely right. That's sort of respectful disagreement is the sort of thing that persuades people to change their position in a reasoned way. It's not hyperbole. It's not talking heads nattering back and forth at each other. It's a nuanced, detailed, deep conversation about something that's of import for everyone who lives in this state. And frankly, you're not going to hear it anyplace else. And in my mind, that's worth $5 a month. That's worth $10 a month. That's worth a $20 flat donation if that's all you can manage. Really, anything that you can give today to help us out will keep cable coming out of your speakers and will keep you a more informed Oregonian.
Now, we want to thank, we've got some restaurants who are helping us out today here. These are the people who feel that KBU is important enough to give their support. We've got Marcy Bakery over on Northeast Broadway. We've got Hoda's over on Southeast Belmont and India House. Ooh, a good curry would be just right on a day like this. And they're having their support here to KBU to help us with the pledge drive. And we'd like you to call us up and give us your support here at KBU. Now, we've got these books that we're offering.
Oh, yeah, we have all kinds of goodies here. We've continued to offer the trifecta of election books for $120 minimum pledge. How to Steal an Election, Brave New Ballot, The Standard to Safeguard Democracy in the Age of Electronic Voting, and What Happened in Ohio. And we've got all kinds of other stuff too, including a CD of John Lennon called Lennon Legend, The Very Best of John Lennon, a $24.99 retail value that is yours for $120 minimum pledge. We've got free dinner for two at Aztec Willie's Restaurant for a $60 minimum pledge. We've got a $25 gift certificate to St. John's Books for a $75 minimum pledge, and a copy of We Moon 07, Gaia Rhythms for Women, for a $75 minimum pledge. So we've got everything for every flavor of listener. If you call up this morning, we've got our famous custom designed t-shirts. We've got KBU mugs. We've got stickers for your car, for your bike, for your binder, for whatever you want to slap it on your forehead. 503-232-8818 is the number to call. 1-877-500-KBOO. We can't do it without you.
Now, we did mention that the premiums that we did offer for certain prizes, for certain amounts of money, but, you know, we can work it out with you that if you want to just give $5 a month or something like that, or just $5 to be just all that you want to give, that's perfectly fine. Our basic subscription rate is $40, and that helps with our operating fees and helps keep us going here at the station. You know, it's like when you're listening to a radio station, it's like imagine you have a best friend across town and you want to talk to all the time, and so you've just dialed their number on the phone, and you don't even hang up. You just leave the phone off the hook, and you just pick it up and talk to somebody across town. And that's what we have here at KBU, because we have a phone line that goes from the studios here out to the transmitter and then broadcast out to you. So we have a constant phone line, and then we have the transmitter. That's plugged into the wall out there. There's a bunch of money for us right there. We got the lights on. We got the computers running down here. We have all sorts of expenses that we have to do just to keep the thing going.
All kinds of bells and whistles. We got a bunch of hamsters running on wheels. We got, you know,
we still have the hamsters.
We do. There's all kinds of things we have to do around here. You know, stuff breaks down, equipment wears out. There's upgrades we need to make. We have recently increased our internet presence and upgraded our website. All of these things cost money, and we have to turn to you, our listeners, because it's not coming from the private sector. It's not coming from government. Those folks could care less. In fact, those folks constantly feed you a diet of news and public affairs programming that doesn't tell you what's going on. If you want to know what's happening, this is the place to go. 503-232-8818 is the number to call. 1-877-500-5266.
Yeah, normally we don't interrupt our programming. We let the talk flow, but we come to you a couple of times a year to ask you for your support, to ask you to call us in, because we make our expenses with money sent in by the listeners, and that's the plan, the crazy, whacked-out plan that we do here at KBU, which has been working for over 30 years of presenting music and public affairs and news uninterrupted, commercial-free, and done by the community, that we let people come in here and start up a program, and they're on the air, and people love listening to them, and the only way that we can keep it going is to come to you each, you know, every couple of seasons with our pledge drive. So 503-232-8818 is the number that we're asking you to give us a call, a $40 subscription. We have other amounts for other sort of premiums and stuff that we'd like to give you, and we'd like to just be able to keep going and presenting the sort of radio that you love listening to, you love waking up to, you love listening to in the middle of the day, keeping you company.
Yeah, that's right. You know, I need to hear some phones ringing here. We're trying to appeal to your better angels, as the Republicans say, but really, we'll bring down the hammer of guilt if you don't pick up the phone. Shame on you! Yeah. If you don't join KABU today, 503-232-8818, 1-877-500-KBOO. This wonderful music here at KABU, this wonderful news and commentary comes out of your speakers into your ears, and it doesn't happen for free. We have to rely on you, our listeners, to make everything go here. If you want to make a pledge online, you can do that too, www.kboo.fm. Your boss will never even catch on. 503-232-8818 is the number to call. Please give us a hand here. Keep this thing going, this legacy, this wonderful programming that has been coming to you for years and years and years, the programming that makes Portland what it is today.
Well, we've got a couple people who've called in. Mike out in Scappoose, he's renewing his membership. Thanks a lot, Mike. And Colleen, she's a new member right here in Portland, and they've called in. We'd like you to call in as well. 503-232-8818 is the number that we want to, that we'd like you to call.
Yes, we want to hear those phones ringing off the hooks because we're down to the final minutes, and I know that folks were so engaged and looking through their voters pamphlet while Tom and I were talking that they didn't take the time to call.
Yes, but that must be it. Because
I'm sure that's what it was.
I was listening too.
Because
I wish I had my guiders here because I wanted to catch up on what you were talking about.
Well, absolutely. I certainly understand that, but I'm hopeful that the audience will understand the significance of the need for them to pick up the phone now.
Hey, we've got a special goodie right now. If you want to come right down to our station, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, we can hand you a George Bush wanted poster. It's an Old West-style poster. It's got a picture of the chimp in chief making one of his famous faces, and it says, Wanted, George W. Bush, the outlaw known as the Toxic Texan for crimes against the planet and attempted assassination of the Kyoto Treaty. It's a beautiful thing, and it can be yours right now if you walk your pledge into our studios at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue.
That is a wonderful looking poster.
Yes, so come on down here.
All your liberal friends will be so, they'll want it. They'll want to get it from you.
We'll have poster envy.
Yeah, poster envy.
Poster envy, oh man.
So
we're
want
down
you to
the
call.
Last minute.
And if you live outside of the Portland area, 1-877-500-5266. 500-5266 on the 1-877 number. To give us a call from Southwest Washington or other parts of the world, right here to KBOO to support listener-supported radio.
That's really all it takes is that simple phone call. It'll be painless. You won't even notice. You can even set up an automatic funds transfer every month so you don't even have to think about it. Pick up the phone right now and you set in motion a course of events that will continue to bring your pledge to us every month, $5, $10, $20, whatever you can afford to give. We will take it. We need it. If we didn't need it, we wouldn't be asking. It's not as if there's a whole lot of executive bonuses going out to the staffers here at KABU. In fact, most of us work here for nothing because we love what we do and we love what KABU means to the community.
Yeah, we're able to come down here and produce programs to be broadcast. And there's been a lot of people who have started in the news department here, gone on and worked at other places. That's a good start for people. And it's a start for people who are doing other things but like to keep their hand in on radio. And for people who love music and want to hear a certain type of music that you don't hear and give it their own personal swing. I mean, guys will come in with whole boxes of records or boxes of CDs and not have stuff and put it together in the way that they like to do it. And it's like we say, it's handmade radio. So once again, 503-232-8818, and you calling in is how we keep it going down here. 1-877-500-5266 is the number for outside of Portland. Joanne, you have anything more to say?
I just want to thank our listening audience and our callers. I think we had a very productive conversation today. I encourage you all to vote. Every vote counts. Every vote matters.
It sure does in this century, doesn't it?
It
every
absolutely
vote does count.
And how wonderful we live in Oregon where we know votes are actually counted.
Exactly.
So have a great day. See you next week, same time, same place.
Give us a call.
And someone asked for the Oregon Action number, and that number is 503-282-6588. Thank you very much. See you next week, same time, same place, same channel.
Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your right. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Preacher, man, don't tell me heaven is on the earth. I know you don't know what life is really worth. It's the thought that needs a scroll. I've the story that never been told. So now you see the light. Hey, stand back from your eyes. Come on, get up, stand up. Stand up for your right.
Nah, man, don't hang out with the girl. I'm gonna take you somewhere.
Well, where are you gonna take me?
Hold up, I'll tell you right now.
Alright.
Deck out in your funkiest Halloween costume for the Cable Boo Bash. This fundraiser will be broadcast live and features a wide range of Portland's best underground musical talent, including Fleshstone, D&D, Evolutionary Jazz Band, DJ P-Disco, and much more. The party takes place at Holocene, located at 1001 Southeast Morrison, on Halloween night, Tuesday, October 31st, from 8 p.m. to 2 a.m. For more information, please check out Cable on the web at cable.fm.
Good morning to Thursday Morning Radio Zoom for Thursday, October 26th. It is now 9:03, almost 9:04. Coming up this morning, next on Press Watch, Teresa Mitchell's guest is David Holtzman, author of Privacy Lost, How Technology is Endangering Your Privacy. At 10, Mie Kim presents Radio Beyond Borders with a report on a century of Korean immigration to Oregon. At 10:30 on Art Focus, Julie's guests are Kelly, Alex, and Jonathan from the Portland Art Center. And 11, it's Democracy Now! I'd like to say that this KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing and Gazelle Full Circle Resale. Now accepting like new natural fiber clothing, jewelry, accessories, and curios, Gazelle and Full Circle Resale are both located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont and can be reached at 503-284-4192. This KABU program has also been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Portland's gay and lesbian community Yellow Pages, providing a wide array of gay-friendly business listings. More information at 503-230-7701 or www.pdxgayyellowpages.com. And now, without further ado, well, maybe a little bit of ado, because I want to find Teresa's theme before we go to, and I know exactly where it is. Ah! There we are. We will go straight to Press Watch. Stay tuned.
Yeah, it's 9:05, almost 9:06 Pacific Time, and you're tuned to KBOO Portland, and I'm Teresa Mitchell, and this is Press Watch, the news you're not supposed to know, and I have an interview this morning, which I'll be telling you about in just a moment. I wanted to start off, however, with pointing out, well, the news you're not supposed to know, apparently, and that would be, unless you've been listening to KBOO News, you may be unaware that there is a massive military buildup in the waters of the Persian Gulf. The Iwo Jima strike force, which is several large ships, the Eisenhower strike force, which is a carrier battle group, and the Enterprise Strike Force are all out there. That's two aircraft carriers and, oh, I don't know, about four or five dozen ships. And we're talking missile destroyers, submarines, mine layers, minesweepers, frigates. I don't know what a frigate is. Always thought it was something you said when you were angry, or perhaps a bird, but they're out there. And this is exactly what we just did. The engineer suggests with chagrin, with quotation marks around it. This is what we just did to North Korea, and it was a similar situation there where the U.S. public was utterly unaware of the fact that there was a massive naval provocation going off the shores of North Korea, scaring the crap out of them and provoking them to test a nuclear weapon. And I think the Bush administration kind of got what it wanted with that, although they didn't handle the, I suppose they didn't handle the propaganda in their usual slick fashion. Maybe Karl Rove had a cold. I seem to have allergies this morning. And that's the way that goes. So, yeah, tremendous naval provocation happening right now. Gee, I wonder if that'll turn into an October surprise. The more surprising when you don't even know that this war provocation is going on. However, to the point, this morning I am happy to have, if the technology fairies are working properly, David Holtzman on the line. Is that true? Hello, Mr. Holtzman.
Yes, I'm here.
He is there. Wonderful. And David H. Holtzman has written Privacy Lost, How Technology is Endangering Your Privacy. And the title is pretty accurate, but just stay tuned because you're going to find out just how deep this goes. And I was very impressed with the book. It explains why privacy is at risk, and more than that, it explains much of what you're losing and how things are changing in the net age and in the technology age. When your privacy is just not only lost, but your information is just swapped all over the place. The book is filled with anecdotes, little short examples that are put in little shaded bars, which I found to be a very effective way of bringing the information to the point. And I'm pretty impressed with it. How long did it take you to write it?
Took a year.
Took a year. Okay, well, you must have had to do a lot of research because it's one of those books that it's something that you obviously thought of in toto, that you composed, trying to put out this rather detailed idea to the public, and it works.
Great, thank you.
This is our membership drive, and I've done three book interviews so far, and this is the first one in hardback. And I like getting a hardback. It's just, I don't know, it's got some heft to it or something. And, for example, on page 194 and 195, you have the Metro Mail Rapist. And I found that rather shocking, and I thought I'd ask you to use that as sort of an introduction to the book.
Now, this is the one about the lady who was getting stalked by Metro Mail. I have a book here.
Yes, from prison.
Yeah. The deal with that was that the Metro Mail was using prisoners to enter information, consumer information, in from coupon clippings and supermarket giveaways. And I think that's one of the things that people don't realize. Every time you go to a store and ask you to fill out something, or they want to give you one of these courtesy cards or anything like that, that it's all, it all flows downhill, and then it gets into these big data seas. And in this particular case, they were using prisoners to key punch things in from these various offers. Someone took one of the prisoners took a liking to one of the women in the dossiers. And I should point out they have typically a 50-page dossier on most consumers somewhere, and a lot of database companies have it, not just Metro Mail, but other ones. And the guy who liked her saw the picture of her, saw a lot of personal information on her, and started sending stalking notes. And it took quite a while for the authorities to figure out it was a guy in jail.
And so some efforts have been made in that particular case to watch who they use, but I just thought it was, just sort of a good soundbite to start off on exactly how crazy things are getting as privacy goes out the window and technology comes in.
Yeah, one you know, interesting thing to think about, and I should say, you know, a little bit my background in the sense that I am a technologist. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a journalist. I ran the domain name system through much of the 90s, and I was the chief technology officer.
Domain names?
I was at IBM and a lot of other technology companies. So the fundamental problem here is the data just doesn't disappear. Anything that's ever been digitized or entered in somewhere is probably going to be around till the end of time.
Whether you find it embarrassing now or not. For example, yeah. I am transgender, and my previous name was Steve Mitchell, and so the other day I decided to look up Steve Mitchell, and oh yeah, he's still out there.
You could actually find history of you.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's, and it's okay if people, well, I don't know if it's okay, but it's less of an impact if people are comfortable with the information, but often people don't want that information out for one reason or another, and they want to leave a part of their past behind, and it's become, Google's made it very difficult to do that.
Yep. One might say impossible.
Right, and, you know, and it's, there's an argument, I think, for how wonderful it is to have all this information available, and I'm a library junkie, I'm a book junkie. I love being able to look things up on the internet. I think it's fantastic, but it's scary that people don't understand the impact that this is going to have on them, especially kids. You know, I look at blogs, and I'm amazed at the things that people write about their personal life in blogs, somehow thinking no one else is reading this. And it's going to be around forever.
Yes, but anyone can find it I suppose especially with a keyword search, which brings up your seven sins list: intrusion, latency, deception, profiling, ID theft, outing, and lost dignity.
Yes.
And you detail all of those beautifully. I was thinking about profiling because my daughter told me yesterday that she got, now I need to back up and give some more news you're not supposed to know. According to Wayne Madsen, you probably are familiar with that website, WayneMadsenReport.com.
Mm-hmm.
Reporting on the 25th, the FBI has created its own, group of deputies in 25 cities. Deputies trained with handguns, rifles, shotgun, they're sort of like little Stasi spies. There are 25 training academies in 25 cities, and Portland, Oregon is one of them. Boston, Dallas, Denver. My daughter got a phone call last night, and they referred to her by part of her name, and if you're profiling someone, that name sounds Muslim, and in fact part of her family was Muslim. Of course, the ironic thing is the only extensive religious training she has is she's Jewish, and she speaks Hebrew, and so they're way off the mark, but she got a really creepy phone call from someone who was, I think, either voice printing her or trying to find out something about her. And I suspect that came out of profiling. It may have been one of these FBI deputies. I don't know. But I wonder if you could talk about the seven sins a little bit.
Sure. Well, one of the things I did when I started writing this book is I went out and researched what other people had written about privacy. And there's a lot of stuff out there, but most of it comes from lawyers. And, you know, I don't have a huge heartburn with lawyers. But in fact, my daughter just graduated from Lewis and Clark this year.
Oh, my sister graduated from Lewis and Clark Law School.
Yeah, so she's, in fact, I think she's probably listening to the show now.
Well, congratulations.
Thanks. But the legal approach to privacy is a hair-splitting one. I don't think it doesn't deal with people, and it doesn't deal with the feelings that people have. So I wanted to try, and I thought if I categorized privacy, because nobody agrees on the definition of privacy. You get a lot of different words and a lot of different meanings. So I came up with this idea of seven sins of privacy, and I came up with seven kinds of things that I at least would consider to be a privacy violation. So things like latency, for instance. I mean, the idea with latency is that when you give somebody your information, you don't know how long they're going to keep it. In fact, they keep it forever. Like if you have set up a phone company record, if you get a cell phone or a landline in your house or something, and then you switch and you're no longer their customer, most people think that they delete the records. In fact, they don't. In fact, what actually does happen is any privacy protection that there were on that information goes away because you're no longer their customer. They're no longer bound by the arrangement, and then they just sell the data.
and then someone sells that data, and then someone sells that, and it all gets mixed together and reprofiled, no doubt.
Right.
You You, in the preface, you put your vital statistics, which you found apparently on a very swift online search and without even trying very hard, and it has not only your age and address and birthplace, but your date of birth, your height, weight, hair, eyes, travels, education, veteran status, your blood type, your dental work, your credit cards.
Yeah, it was
cards.
Actually worse than that. My publisher was very uncomfortable about the original version of that, and I had about a 20-page bio of myself that even made me uncomfortable, and I thought I was pretty open. It's amazing the stuff that you can find on, and not just public figures, but just normal people. And there's more and more of it available. It isn't all available from Google, but it's all getting there. Like, for instance, medical records. There was an act that Congress passed called HIPAA a couple of years ago.
And we all got so much paperwork about it and thought, well, we're getting all private now.
Right, it's typical of privacy legislation because it actually has the opposite effect. What happened was every doctor in existence made you sign some kind of a waiver or disclaimer, and then they just did what they wanted to do anyway. So in cases like that, if you have a managed health care provider, typically they have the right to pull information out of your health care files from the doctor, and then it just starts going all over the place. You don't know where that information's going. And then you add governmental interference with things like the Patriot Act on top.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I went into that extensively in the book because the Patriot Act is a good example of the kinds of things that the government's doing now to just accelerate this process. On top of that, another thing that the government's doing, unfortunately, is that there are cases where the government's barred from collecting data for various reasons against citizens, but there's no bar against them buying the data that already exists. So what they do is they encourage database providing companies like Axiom or ChoicePoint or Experian to create these profiles on each of us, which may include medical data, which may include legal data, which may include social data, and then they buy those records. Then it goes in the government database, and it just keeps moving around, so it's a moving target. You can't delete the thing even if you wanted to.
And we're about to have a little... We're about to be joined by Membership Central, but before we do that, I thought I'd look at your threat potential, which you say is an overall analysis of behavior patterns, credit reports, emails, and travel history, which I suppose would be most interesting to corporations or the government. And you list online gambling, buys subversive books, browses counterculture sites, emails known terrorists, visits known terrorist sites, travels to suspect countries, uses encrypted mail, threat risk. And your threat risk comes out low. And I thought I'd come out and do mine. Let's see. Online gambling, known. Buys subversive books, lots. Browses counterculture sites constantly. Emails known terrorists. Yeah, probably, because I'm sure a number of the activists that I consider to be great people are considered terrorists by... So the more conservative police types. Visits known terrorist sites. Oh, heck yeah, all the time for this program. Travels to suspect countries. Yes. Uses encrypted email. Don't know how. So my threat risk must be, you know, gigantic, and I'm not even going to try to get on an airplane.
Well, but, there you go.
Yeah. it's one of the things that this book kind of brings to a point and gives you an idea of just how fast things are moving. This book has been made available to us by the author and publisher, and we're very glad to have at least 10 copies, and I was looking into possibly getting some more. And we are offering it as a gift to those of you who feel now ready to join KBOO and do your civic duty, join your community radio station.
Increase your threat risk.
That would increase your profile, I'm sure.
We're probably good for 5%.
So let's see, Andrew's there, and who else?
That's Eugene.
Hi.
Also known as Terrorist Johnson.
Yeah.
Hey, so I want to let people know about a really exciting opportunity they have in the next 40 minutes to double the value of their pledge without actually increasing their pledge amount. We have a match. We have an anonymous KBOO donor who wants to give $500 matching the next $500 in at 503-232-8818.
I thought you were going to say invest in gold or platinum or something.
Well, that's later.
Invest in Halliburton. That's where the money's at.
So you, too, can get a copy of Privacy Lost, How Technology is Endangering Your Privacy for a $60 pledge. That $60 pledge, if you call right now, will actually be $120 value to your community radio station.
Woo! And how much is a $120 pledge then?
Let's see. that'd be a $240 pledge.
Well, that's mm-hmm. what I like people to do is to pledge $10 a month, and that would get you the book.
$5 a month would get them the book, but I would say that if you did $10 a month, we could give you a copy of Privacy Lost, and then we got a bunch of other books that have been kicking around all drive, some
yes,
of which are from previous shows of yours, Teresa. What
yeah, but they're probably not as resonant as this one, because this is a hardback, so if you get annoyed at a meeting, you can do stuff like this.
Well, let's see. Which of these is a hardback?
None of them.
No. One of them is House of Bush, House of Saud by Craig Unger. We've only got one of those left, and it thumps just like this one.
Yes, it. Oh, and there's a caller coming in for it right now. Have we given the numbers yet, even?
Yes.
Okay, good. Shall we give them again?
Yeah.
The number is 503-232-232-8818.
So I'm looking at or 877-500-5266. You can also pledge online at kboo.fm. I've got a copy of Privacy Lost here, Teresa.
I see that you did.
I'm sort of stunned, in a sense, and not that former member of the U.S. House of Representatives, Bob Barr, has kind of a promo blurb, praise, actually, it's called, for the book here.
And forward by Senator Evan Bayh, so hey.
Yeah, I know. It's really interesting. I want to totally check this book out. I just saw this yesterday.
It's got Smart Dust. I'm going to ask him about that soon.
Oh, yeah. See, this is the only radio station. Smart Dust. Yeah, you Smart pay Dust. Attention, Emily, when this goes on. Smart Dust is something that's been in practice for a few years now in a research setting. Yeah, do a Google thing. Smart Dust.
Do you snort that stuff?
Nah, that's stupid dust. That's the old-fashioned stupid dust. The Smart Dust is even worse.
Should keep these things straight.
Okay, this is the only radio station where you've probably ever even heard about the issue of your personal privacy and the threats to it. Yeah, your personal privacy, whoever I'm talking to right now, the National Security Agency's been listening to your phone calls for 5 years now. The New York Times sat on a finished story for a year about this. The story broke. And, yeah, KBOO doesn't exactly have the resources to break big national stories like that, but when things do come out, people here like Teresa, sometimes when I get the chance, I will too, we find guests for the radio who have a critical perspective on the official story. And you don't get that opportunity anywhere but listener-supported community radio. You don't get it from public broadcasting. It's not what they do. But it is exactly what we are supposed to do. In fact, KBOO's public affairs broadcasting, if I can just get my props ready here, KBOO's, and a lot of people probably don't know this, new listeners especially, KBOO's news and public affairs programming shall place an emphasis on providing a forum for unpopular, controversial, or neglected perspectives.
That's
on important local, national, and international issues, reflecting KBOO's values of peace, justice, democracy, human rights, multiculturalism, environmentalism, freedom of expression, and social change.
Damn hippies.
Now,
yay, hippies.
If even a small part of that sounds reasonable to you, call us at 503-232-8818. Make a pledge of support to your community radio station. We're running just a hair long on the fall 2006 drive because we have to hit the financial goal that we need. It's not like we're figuring, oh, we can just run this a little long, get some cream on the top, and then we're all going to the tropics in the end of the year.
Woohoo!
You're not going? No, I can't go. I'm going to be dealing with the membership drive. No, we need to raise $175,000. This is our basic operating expenses for the first half of this year. So that's why we're running a little long. We've got a $500 match going right now. And I would like to thank Kristen from giving a call from Forest Grove. She has made an additional pledge on her existing automatic deduction. So thanks to her.
Thank you very much.
I bet she called the local 503-232-8818 number. But I'd love to hear from someone like way up the valley, maybe listening at 100.7. What would they call?
they would call 1-877-500-5266.
Like everyone in Camas and Vancouver and other spots in southern Washington?
Well, and you can actually call the 877-500-5266 phone number from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada.
Hey, Eugene, you guys, how much do I have to pledge to become a member to get the book Privacy Lost by David Holtzman that we've just been listening to? What do I have to do to get that?
$60.
$60 is only $60.
Yeah, and you can actually do that as $5 a month out of your checking account, Emily.
And it's hardbound.
So I couldn't even afford maybe to go out and buy that book right now, but I could afford to start and become a member and get all those benefits and everything.
Yeah, or you could just put it on your credit card and then ignore it while it accumulates 24% compounded interest and pay it off in 5 years when you refinance your house.
Can I come down to KBOO and meet all us strange folks at 20 Southeast 8th in between Burnside and Ankeny across from the Imago Puppet Theater, Kitty Corner from City Bikes?
No. Oh, no. Yes, yes, yes. That's what I meant.
I'll go next.
Yes, you could. So we should let you get back to talking to David here, Teresa. The phones have been going. I see a couple people on the phone still.
Awesome.
We have a $500 match, so please do give us a call. The value of your pledge will be doubled by an anonymous KBOO donor, and we'll be back in a little bit with an update on how we're doing, and let's get back to more of Press Watch and Smart Dust.
Hi, David Holtzman.
Hello.
You're very patient. Have you done community radios before?
No, this is first.
Oh, wow. Then you're really very patient. Well, that's that's how we do it. We've been doing this for weeks now because abjure? I better be careful. I'm not sure if that's the right word. We don't take donations from certain categories of non-persons, like Archer, Daniels, Midland. No, we trash them, but we don't take their money. And we really do depend on this community radio model of we take our money and our direction from the public that we serve. And it's worked well for us for more than, well, heck, we're getting on to 40 years now. So, thank you for your patience. I wanted to ask you about Smart Dust.
Sure.
And before we get into that, once again, you're listening to KBOO 90.7 in Portland. Frequencies elsewhere. And I'm talking with David H. Holtzman, author of Privacy Lost, How Technology is Endangering Your Privacy. And Smart Dust, well, I don't know if it's what you think it is, but what is it?
Smart Dust is something, I think the Soviets originally designed it, and it's a way of tracking people invisibly.
Oh, you mentioned the Stasi, I think you're making reference to the Stasi using a radioactive substance to track people.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was nasty. That was not a safe substance. I guess they just didn't care. And you say that it's developed as a surveillance tool to spy on enemies in the United States, but it's currently the size of a rice grain. Now, I know things change really quickly. Is that still true that their Smart Dust is about the size of a rice grain and costs about $50 a pop?
I think that's right. I mean, the thing about technology is technology that seems really exotic, it's really an economic issue because once it comes down enough, it becomes ubiquitous and you can use it for a lot of things, like large-screen TVs. You know, a couple of years ago, you saw them like at Times Square or at a football game or something. And now, you know, it's within almost anybody's reach if they want to put a large screen TV in their house. And the same thing happens with other kinds of technology. It's the basis of, you know, just economies of scale. And that's going to happen with things like Smart Dust. As it becomes cheaper, then it'll be likelier to be deployed and, you know, for whatever possible reason. I mean, there's no law blocking it. So they could, you know, the law enforcement could use it or so could anybody else.
Well, I want to understand basically what it is. So it's basically, I guess, a miniaturized sensor, a processor, and a transponder?
Yeah.
And the size of a rice grain?
Yeah.
So you can spread this stuff, especially if you've got buku bucks, like the Pentagon, you can spread this stuff around, and it gives you all kinds of information, I guess, depending on what kind of sensor you put on it, maybe even olfactory-based information.
In theory. I mean, it's pretty limited transmission range, but another related technology that's a lot more imminent is something called RFID chips. And RFID, I don't know if you guys have them out there, but on the East Coast there's a lot of toll roads, and they have these speed pass things where you can go through the roads and it just
It just takes care of the toll as you go underneath it. And that's an RFID transponder. They're also putting them into U.S. passports by the end of next year. And they're going into credit cards now. They're going into clothing. Levi's has been talking about putting them into blue jeans. They're still about a nickel or a dime or something for an RFID chip. When they get down to about a penny, you're going to see them replacing barcodes in almost all store merchandise. And we're talking within the next 2-3 years. And those things are also trackable within, 20 feet, 30 feet.
Yeah, I use a transponder to get in to work, which my workplace is one of those that's, gotten the security mania, and I'm supposed to believe that now that I've got, a transponder to get into the door instead of just my face. I'm a bus driver. Closing electric gates with barbed wire on them that Osama bin Laden will now not presumably drive a truck bomb into little old Portland, Oregon's bus fleet.
I'm glad you're safe.
The other funny thing about that is as if it would work, as if that would stop someone who was determined to hurt us. But the thing that bugs me about it is the threat just isn't there to that degree. But we're all pretending now, and privacy goes with it. And anyone who's got a powerful enough detector can tell where I'm at from that transponder, I'm sure.
Yeah, I'm sure that's true. Some credit cards are starting to come out that way now. There's been something been talked about in the news in the last couple of days about these credit cards that can be read from maybe a couple of inches away, so that you get cards in the mail, somebody can sweep a detector on the outside of the mailbox and read the information off your credit card without even opening the envelope.
One of the things that you mentioned I think is very true, and it's the attitude of corporations that if it isn't specifically illegal, then it is licit. It's okay to do it. So why not? That's the operating. People think that they're really geniuses for coming up with ideas like, let's say, get an infrared scan of your face at the same time you use your credit card, so that next time you show up in the store or any place where that information has been sold, the clerk can just say, "Oh, hi, Ms. Mitchell," and have this list of information on you.
Well, sure. I mean, I think there's kind of a bigger issue going on in this country right now, which is that, as you were alluding to, I mean, there's this idea that if it isn't illegal, it must be okay. And that's a whole lot of ground right now. And the kind of the premise of the book is that technology makes it all worse, because technology makes all these new things possible which are completely not protected by the law. So even though there's wiretapping laws about listening on phone calls, there's no laws about listening in on cell phones, and there's absolutely no laws about listening in to voice over IP calls like Skype. You can't open postal mail, but you can open email. So as technology replaces conventional things, all the legal protections are being stripped away, and nobody's replacing them, nor is there any signs they're going to, which is making us into a privacy-lost society.
This is something that your book makes very clear, and it reminds me of a wrinkle that you elucidate very well, and that is that there are generational changes in net privacy awareness. And you list, several stages of denial, I guess you'd say.
Yeah.
And dealing with or being aware of this privacy technology situation. I was going to try and nudge you to talk about that a little bit. I mean, for example, you point out that my generation, I'm about your age, baby boomers, almost, we're on the tail end of the baby boomers, we're concerned about government surveillance. And the younger generations just assume that they don't have that privacy, and the older generations are trying to deal with it in different manners, either by denial or just avoidance, or being a curmudgeon, as you say. And that gets into fighting back, which you have at the end of the book. You have a chapter on fighting back and 5 strategies for fighting back. But before I get to that, actually, I want to ask you about privacy and habeas corpus. I'd say habeas corpus has been pretty much shot down now.
Pretty much.
And what does this mean? I mean, in terms of profiling, how do you feel? Do you feel you're in, Herndon, Virginia? The last time I was in Herndon, I was talking with Ralph McGeehee. Do you know who he is?
No, I don't.
He was a Notre Dame All-Star. He was CIA field agent. When he retired, he wrote books which got around the SNEP ruling by using already published information to point out just how extensive the CIA's private warfare program was. He's disappeared. He bought me pizza once. I liked him. And no one seems to know where he is.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, kind of sickening, really. I thought he was a nice guy. I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, he participated in some nasty things that the CIA did in Vietnam, but I respect someone who can, you know, turn around and say, okay, I admit that what I did was immoral, and, you know, now I'm going to try to do something about it. And he's gone, and I think that this sort of disappearance is going to become easier now that habeas corpus is gone, and we can find, not we, but the government can find information on you at the drop of a hat and find you anywhere. You point out on page 161 that the FCC mandated that all U.S. cell phones be equipped with locating technology, which enables phones to be targeted within 100 feet. Ostensibly, you say this feature was required to assist authorities with 911 calls. In practice, advertising companies are already gearing up to take advantage of this new tracking opportunity by beaming unasked-for coupons or sales flyers to passersby as they walk by a store. And I don't have a cell phone, so I'm laughing. But I think I would be thoroughly annoyed if I had a cell phone.
Yeah, but you do have a transponder.
I do have a transponder, so I'm not going to get away from that, but at least it can't send me ads. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you know, one of the things that's kind of interesting about privacy is everybody has sort of a different definition of it. To a lot of people, privacy is anonymity, and the idea that no one should be able to know what you buy or where you go. And if that's your idea of privacy, it's dead.
It's gone.
It's not coming back anymore. And especially in your part of the country, I think there's a lot of free spirits in the Portland area, and I think a lot of people have gravitated toward there in the last 30 years for exactly that reason, because that is their view of privacy. Those are the people who are going to be the most threatened. There's another kind of privacy which I think is still up for grabs, which is, you know, having the government or whoever get insight into your thoughts, which is I think way more insidious. And even that is becoming an issue. I mean, you talk about habeas corpus and things like that. I mean, you know, your ability to be located somewhere, that's a bad enough thing. But what I'm really worried about is having them figure out what I'm thinking. So you do things like if you go to if you use Amazon.com or if you go to Powell's or whatever, you go and you look up your book list and you see what somebody's been reading for the last year or two, and then you look and see who they're talking to, and you look at what they buy in the grocery store. And this is all quite doable, by the way, and not just by the government, but even by, you know, MasterCard can do it if they want to, practically. So then you look at all that together, and you can tell an incredible amount of information on somebody, on their thoughts, their opinions, the way they might vote, you know. That, to me, is just terrifying.
And that gets into profiling again. So I want to ask you some more about that. I also want to ask you about the massive laptop and disk ID thefts that are believed to be populating the Total Information Awareness database. But before I do that, we need to do the community radio membership drive thing again.
It's so true.
So we're joined now by membership experts Andrew and Eugene.
Actually, Eugene has become invisible. I want to thank Laura in Portland, who's a renewing member. I want to thank Kathy, who's a new member from Portland. Michael, who's a new member from Portland. Jeffrey in Portland, who renewed. We already mentioned Kristen out in Forest Grove renewing. And Etta down in Lake Oswego also renewing. We have almost hit the match that we have running for Press Watch here.
Oh, wonderful.
And you can be the last person in on this match.
Just to set the table, we are talking about privacy loss, how technology is endangering your privacy, and I've been talking with David H. Holtzman. Go ahead, Andrew.
And we're looking for some phone calls at 503-232-8818, or outside the local area, anywhere in the States or Canada, 877-500-5266. For a $60 pledge, you can get a copy of Privacy Lost, How Technology is Endangering Your Privacy, by David Holtzman, the guest today on Press Watch. You can do that as a $5 a month electronic deduction out of your checking account, and you will probably not even miss the $5 a month. I heard someone earlier this drive talking about how you'd be walking down the street and you see something in a shop window and you go, I would love to have one of those, and you lay out $10, say.
Right.
And if you did that once a month, that's $120 a year that you spent impulse on what?
Some things.
But I like those cute little Hello Kitty things that have the bottom.
Yeah.
I like to step on the... No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Well, 503-232-8818. That's the number to call to join KBOO this morning. Just like Andrew was saying, so easy to do. Consider KBOO your community radio station, your impulse gift to yourself and the rest of your community, month after month. $5 a month, $10 a month. Easy to do when you dial 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266.
Okay, so four of the five phones are currently lit. The last phone ringing will send us straight back to Press Watch right now. That could be you who sends us straight back to Teresa and David Holtzman.
And you can get this book.
And you can get the book. Hey, there it is. Okay, so we're going back to Press Watch.
503-232-8818.
We'll give you a wrap-up at the top of the hour. Back to you, Teresa.
Oh, well, that's quick. I like that. Well, then, in that case, let me just check with the engineer. And so we are going to... Pledge pitch. We're going to membership drive pitch once again at later on, and we don't know exactly. Okay. And that's how it is, David Holtzman, author of Privacy Lost. So let's see. The massive laptop and disk ID thefts. Do you know what I'm talking about when I mention that?
There's been a couple of cases. Do you mean anyone in particular?
There is a tremendous list of the total... laptops have been stolen all over the country on a continuing basis. There's a list once again on WayneMadsenReport.com. And, well, you heard about the Veterans Administration, but they've been stolen.
Yeah, that's the one I was thinking about.
Yeah, there's Visa has had thousands and thousands of records, actually millions, stolen.
Yeah, in fact, I'm a veteran, so my information was obviously stolen, too.
But that was more than irritating. And, there's a list of corporations and... government sources that have just had their laptops snatched, and the word is that this is an effort to populate the Total Information Awareness Database, and so I'll just leave that out there. Then, if you haven't been particularly following that, but your book certainly may be keenly aware of that story, and so I'll be following that. There's the list is lengthening almost by the day on WayneMadsenReport.com. I had Wayne Madsen on, I think it was last week actually. And so I've been thinking a lot about his efforts. Now, this book, Privacy Lost, How Technology is Endangering Your Privacy, is, as I said, available here at KBOO. And reading overall, the impression that I got from the thing is almost overwhelming. I mean, you're describing a dynamic that now exists and which is now rapidly changing, and I guess you would say accelerating, which will affect the rest of our lives. And the direction that we take politically is going to have a heck of a lot to do with how we deal with it. And so I want to talk about your fighting back section. What
sure.
can be done? You say our privacy may be on the verge of being completely lost. What can we do about it? And you list Gandhi's curmudgeons and vigilantes, and I wonder if I can get you to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, sure. I wanted to call, just like I wanted to break out the sins of privacy, I also wanted to try and put something in there about how, you know, if you want to do something about it, what sort of strategies you can employ. So I gave a spectrum of ways you can do it. I mean, there's sort of the Gandhi approach, which is you turn the other cheek and you just assume, you know, that you're going to grind everybody down passively. And by everybody, I mean anyone who's trying to spy on you one way or the other. But then there's a little bit more overt ones. Like I would qualify myself as what I call in the book a curmudgeon. A curmudgeon is somebody, if you go to the store and you go to buy something and they say, can I have your telephone number, you say no. You should say no anyway. It's amazing how many people will just meekly say yes. I was just out with some friends this morning and they gave their telephone number out at a store when they didn't need to do it. Some people give Social Security numbers out. They take things like, you know, these checkout courtesy cards, which are just, you know, from a privacy viewpoint, they're just god-awful. I mean, curmudgeons fight back. They say no. They question why people need information. And you'll be shocked. Most of the time that you say no, in almost every case, you'll get away with it.
You know, it's funny. One time I didn't. And actually, it was years ago, and it was at a Radio Shack. I went by someone with cash, and they wanted my phone number, and they were not going to sell me the item unless I gave them the phone number.
Yeah, I've had some big arguments at Radio Shack years ago because they have, you know, you go in there and buy a battery and they wanted your phone number.
Yeah.
Now, the reason they want it is because, again, all the data flows downhill. There's a company called Axiom in Conway, Arkansas, and they're the largest direct marketing organization in the world. They have files on every single American and most Canadians and a lot of Europeans. And the files are very detailed. And Experian and ChoicePoint also have information. Axiom is probably certainly the biggest and probably the worst. So what these companies do is they contract with grocery stores and department stores and online marketers, and they sell the information back. It goes both ways. You buy the mailing list from these guys, and then they buy other information from companies. So every time, you know, you fill out a coupon somewhere, or you give your social security number, which you should never do, give your social security number, or even a phone number, it gives them what's called a key field that they can, it's a unique identifier that they can prove that it's you. And a phone number isn't a great way of doing it, but it's better than nothing. So if they have your phone number, now they know it's you, David Holtzman, that lives in such and such an address, and not the other guy who lives on the other side of town. And kaboom, they've got you localized.
And if I use my debit card instead of cash, well, I've got all kinds of information.
Yeah, that's the whole point of being a curmudgeon, I guess. I mean, if you use credit cards, you're pretty much giving it up anyway. But in society today, if you travel at all, you really have to start showing ID now when you never used to. And you generally have to use credit cards. It's very difficult to get hotel rooms and rental cars without using a credit card.
I would say pretty much impossible unless you want to sleep in a no-tell motel where you pay extra for clean sheets.
Yeah, well, some people do. And I don't even have a fundamental problem with the fact that all this information is cross-connected, because a lot of that's inevitable. I'm not a Luddite. I'm not against technology. I help build a lot of this stuff. But the worry I have is the usage of the information. There's no legal constraints on the usage. I'm not even sure you could define adequate legal constraints on the usage. And I don't trust the motivation of people in power. Certainly not the people in power now.
You don't trust the motivation of people in power?
I was trying to be nice.
I guess you've hit on the constant theme of this program.
Well, there's a certain institutional amorality that has infected a lot of places in the United States and in other places, countries too, of course. But you see it in boardrooms. You see it in legislative areas. You see it even in some media functions. And there's a certain kind of cynicism about this, because a lot of these people have two senses of privacy. One is their privacy, and the other one is everybody else's privacy. And those are not the same thing. So you've got a guy like Cheney who claims executive privilege for knowing about, you know, meetings of oil executives in the White House, and that's essentially a privacy issue, whereas on the other hand, he was a staunch supporter and advocate of the Patriot Act, which is about the most anti-privacy legislation that's ever come up in America. So there's a big double standard here that goes on institutionally.
And it's related, obviously, to hierarchy. Yes, well, so we have a situation now, if I may continue to be cynical, in which we have the pretending to care about the working class, affiliating with unions, going along with the corporations party, versus the boy-buggering, warmongering party. And it's hard to know who to trust exactly.
Well, let me make another point on this line, if I may. Everything I've been talking about, much of it's been possible for 30 years. Public records, you know, like courthouse records and credit card records and things like that. And I think most people, the average American, generally feels that even though it could happen to somebody else, it isn't going to happen to them, because most of us feel that we're not important enough to irritate anyone enough to actually bother following up on us.
Yes, that's a myth that I've often told myself.
Well, I think that was true. That was certainly true in the 60s. I mean, if you weren't, you know, if you weren't on Nixon's hate list or something, if your profile hadn't been raised, I think you were more or less safe. You are no longer safe. And the reason you're no longer safe is because the cost of automatically doing all this with computers is minimal. You know, any government employee that has access to large databases can make a sweeping search, you know, against the entire population of the U.S. for someone, you know, who's flown to Baghdad or flown to London or, you know, wherever they want to check. Someone who's bought a certain kind of thing recently, they can search credit card records. The cost of doing database searches like this, it's not zero, but it's, you know, it's a a dollar or two. It's not like $1 million. So because the cost has come down so much, it's just as easy to do these large automated dragnets through databases against all citizens. And that was what the Poindexter's Total Informational Awareness Program was about. The idea, and then the idea that you do all these searches against people, and then you create threat profiles, threat scores, and then if you pass some sort of threshold, you don't get to fly on airplanes anymore, or somebody watches you.
Like, Ted Kennedy and Randy Rhodes, and many, well, leftists who've discovered that they're not trusted enough to get on an airplane anymore.
Yeah, but that's certainly true, but I don't think it's just, I mean, maybe there's a certain correlation to political opinions, but in the future, I mean, it could be correlated to anything. I mean, I could easily imagine a day where I go to a bookstore, you know, like Powell's or something, and I go in and I buy a copy of Mein Kampf and, you know, Mao's Little Red Book and, you know, Abby Hoffman Steal This Book, and there's somebody waiting for me on the sidewalk by the time I get out.
Yes, and you point out that you take the example of Muhammad Atta's eating preferences being profiled. So if you eat halal, you're being followed.
Sure. Well, and within a day after 9/11, they had tracked the credit card receipts on these guys, and they knew they'd been to a topless bar the night before.
Oh, boy. Okay, so to get the inside dope on this, you need a copy of Privacy Lost. I've been talking with David H. Holtzman. The book is called Privacy Lost, How Technology is Endangering Your Privacy. And it is 320-something pages long, and it's a mind-blower. And David Holtzman, I'd like to thank you very much for helping with our membership drive and for letting us know about your book, and also for doing, obviously, a tremendous amount of work to bring all this information together and bring the public up to speed on lost privacy.
Well, thank you very much. It was my pleasure.
David Holtzman in the book Privacy Lost, How Technology is Endangering Your Privacy. We have it here at KBOO. And this is KBOO Portland. I'm Teresa Mitchell. You've been listening to Press Watch. The number to call now to do your civic duty, to join KBOO, to get a copy of Privacy Lost and have all this information at your fingertips is 503-232-8818. This is a very, very current book, too. I guess it needs to be. This is a book for this month. This is a book for right now with carrier groups off the Persian Gulf. And, heck, for all I know, they're still off the North Korean coast. Warmongering happening and the press being excluded. Well, not excluded, but the press collaborating and hiding the fact that this extreme situation is facing us. The other number to call, 1-877-500-5266, and that's for all of you in the greater KBOO community area, although all those of you who are outside the Portland dialing area, for whom we spend that extra money, that extra juice, that extra transmitter, to make sure that you're able to hear the program, too. We very much need to hear from you. So if you're in Salem or Corvallis or Eugene, Vancouver, Camas, give us a call right now, 1-877-500-5266, and I believe that I'm joined now by membership experts once again.
Membership experts. That's right. This is Ani, and I'm here with Andrew. And, you know, this is an important time to support your community radio station. Support KBOO 503-232-8818. If you happen to be in the Portland area, and you can dial us locally, or 1-877-500-5266.
I want to let folks know that the first $500 match from an anonymous KBOO member was reached sometime early on in the second period.
Thank you, anonymous KBOO member.
I'm
so flattered.
We got someone else who called in and said they want to do their very own match. So we've now got another $500 match that
awesome.
We have just 5 minutes to hit. If you were to call us at 503-232-8818, and fill the lines once with people doing, say, a $10 a month pledge, you could get yourself a copy of Privacy Lost, How Technology is Endangering Your Privacy, and you could also pick up a copy of one of several other books that we've got available. These are like last copies kicking around at the end of the drive here. We got The Bush Agenda by Antonia Juhasz, just a couple copies of that. Only one copy left of Vandana Shiva's book, Earth Democracy. We've got Parallel Worlds by Michio Kaku on Press Watch, I believe, in the spring.
Oh, that's awesome.
We only have two of those left. It's a fascinating book. I loved listening to that show. And if you love listening to Press Watch week after week, or maybe today's only your first time and you went, wow, that's a different radio program.
Hey, two matchings. That's wonderful. That means at least two of the 13 people listening to this show are doing okay.
503-232-8818. Or toll-free anywhere outside the area, 877-500-5266. We had one phone open.
503?
And now we have two open. So let's fill these lines up.
503-232-8818. Just as Andrew was saying, in fact, if you've been listening to Press Watch and you've been enjoying the information, it's probably not really the right way to phrase that. I don't enjoy the information I get on Press Watch because generally it's pretty horrifying stuff. But I enjoy knowing that I'm connected, that I'm informed, that I'm aware of the undercurrent that is happening around me. And if you are somebody who values information like that, like Andrew was saying, that $10 a month support KABU to the tune of $120 a year, pick up the copy of Privacy Lost that you were listening to the interview just this morning, just a few minutes ago. And last week, Teresa interviewed Wayne Madsen, and there is a book by Wayne Madsen, Jaded Tasks, Brass Plates, Black Ops, and Big Oil. That was really a fascinating interview. It really kind of shook me. I really, again, value the access to that information that Teresa provides week after week.
And I don't think your hair's standing on edge, won't it? But there's always alcohol.
It does. 503-232-8818. 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. So, and beyond alcohol, I have to say, there's community, and that's what gets us through.
I got a little important piece of information to pass along here. In the intervening moments after that last match was announced, Teresa, your goal's been raised.
Oh, great.
So we got
2 minutes now.
We got 2 minutes right now to come up with what looks like another $350. No, let's call it $360.
Well, I know by the numbers that there are people out there who haven't joined. That's been listening for years. So
that's one person doing a dollar a day pledge.
I should use my Baptist training. I used to hear this every, three times a week, actually. Twice on Sundays and once on Wednesday.
Are you going for the doxology?
Just as I am without
worldly.
I wrote this book and joined KABU.
We're encouraging people.
503-232-8818.
You feel it in your heart.
I want to say, it's like this. We are in kind of bizarre, perilous, strange, dangerous times. And to me, community radio is one of those things that you absolutely need, that we are stronger for having in our own backyard.
We're going to win.
And that is the only way through it. So, you have to support those institutions that will get us through this. You have to support those institutions that provide some harbor and some shelter for some free speech and free ideas and, defiance.
There's someone out there who feels it in her heart right now.
503-232.
Come down the aisle.
8818. 1-877-500-5266. Like Lars, who is a new member in Portland. Like Jesse, a renewing member in Portland.
Yay.
Barbara, a new member in West Lynn. Dina, a renewing member in Portland.
Both of them.
All. Hans, a new member in Portland.
New members, that's awesome.
Tony, a renewing member in Woodland. Thank you all very much for joining, renewing, and supporting KABU Community Radio.
So, as your back is to the phone answerers, I want to let people know that there's three phone lines open, and we've got just seconds to get the phones ringing to hit the second match here for Press Watch. Oh, my God, it's 10 seconds even. And Alspar, there's such a taskmaster.
Give that number.
3-2-3-2-8-8-1-8. We've got $200 to go, apparently, on this match. So give us a call right now, 503-232-8818, or toll-free at 877-500-5266. Stay tuned for Radio Beyond Borders.
Bye-bye. And you are listening to the Thursday Radio Resine on KBOO Portland. Coming up next, it's Radio Beyond Borders with Mie Kim. Stay tuned.
Radio Beyond Borders presents A Century of Korean Immigration to Oregon, featuring Ian McCloskey, director of an award-winning documentary film, Sanguja, A Century of Korean Pioneers, and excerpts from the documentary. I'm your host and producer, Mia Kim.
My name is Ian McCloskey, and I'm the director of Northwest Documentary Arts and Media. With the centennial of Korean immigration to the United States, the local Korean community wanted to commemorate the history here in Oregon, and so the president of the Korean Society of Oregon, HJU, thought it'd be sort of a worthwhile endeavor to make some sort of film that maybe interviewed some of the elders of the community and recorded sort of for posterity the Korean community at that moment in time, and gathered some of the oral histories and the old stories before they were lost. And he was fairly visionary in that sense, in thinking that it would be a good idea for the Korean community to take this sort of centennial cause to tell their story. And so when I spoke with him for the first time, he told me that the Korean story hadn't been told. And so I looked up in the database whether it had been told, and in fact, it really hadn't been told. The Chinese-American story had been fairly well told. The Japanese-American story had been fairly well covered. But there was only one documentary that even came up on the database on Korean immigration and the Korean-American experience. I have to admit how little I knew about Korean-American history. I had gone to school with a lot of Korean Americans. They were my friends. They played soccer with me. You know, we were in the same math and history classes together. But they didn't really, I don't even know if they knew much about their history. It's a story that just really wasn't told and discussed. And I found out how entwined the Korean American story is with the larger American story. It was amazing, just the idea of the picture brides, the early Asian immigration to the Pacific coast in the first wave, the Korean War, and how transformational that was, both to Americans and to Korean Americans and to the two countries, and that it, you know, has caused the rise of South Korea, the rise of North Korea that we know today, and it started international adoption from that war and here in Oregon. From the Holt International, started right here, and just to be able to understand our own community better has been a really great thing in this film, and something that I've learned from the idea that it's not just a Korean story, it's an American story. The story of the film itself traces the 100-year history of Korean immigration to Oregon, and so it covers generations from the turn of the century, Korean picture brides, farm immigrants, and goes through to the Korean War, to Korean adoptees, and into the modern day. And part of the theme of the film is that each generation was a pioneer in their own way, crossing a certain type of frontier. And the first generation was a literal pioneers in the sense of farming, setting up homesteads, and other generations that followed had their own challenges, such as racism or assimilation.
This is Harry Potts. He was born in 1918 during World War I.
You guys saw these pictures before, huh? I remember.
Harry's father, Kyung Soo Park, was one of the very first Korean pioneers. Drawn to the fertile farmlands of the Pacific Northwest, like the earlier immigrants of the Oregon Trail, Kyung Soo Park settled in the shadow of Mount Hood to start a farm and raise a family. Pacific. to Hawaii in 1903 to work the sugarcane plantations. Mostly young laboring men, they saved until they could afford to send for wives and families. Eventually, they would complete the second leg across the Pacific, arriving to the West Coast like the Chinese and Japanese before, to take hard manual labor jobs in laundry, restaurants, groceries, and, like Harry Punk's father, agriculture. One of the very first Korean-American pioneers, Harry Punk's father begins farming in 1904. He works and saves, and 10 years later, in 1914, he is joined by his wife, Sosayim. Many other brides that arrive at this time are picture brides.
All the ladies are here. Is there all picture brides? Because men working in sugarcane in Hawaii doesn't make that much money to go over there to Korea to pick a wife up. No way.
After Pearl Harbor, Pacific Coast Japanese Americans are shipped by train hundreds of miles inland to relocation camps. Businesses and farms are left vacant or are repossessed by the U.S. government. In the absence of the Japanese Americans, anti-Asian prejudice, fueled by the war, turns on the Koreans.
Little kids don't know Japanese or Korean or, you know, Chinese and Korean goes out to the street. They throw a stone and say, "Hey, Jap," you know, kind of thing.
In Korea, at the end of Japanese occupation, a young student named Roksun prepares to cross the Pacific to study nursing. After crossing the Pacific in 1949, Roksun moves in with her great aunt, but only after 1 year finds that she cannot return to Korea. Roksun cannot return to her hometown, now a battle zone. Yet she cannot legally stay in the U.S. because her student visa will expire. Her aunt advises her to marry the charismatic Harry Park, whom she had occasionally seen at dinner parties among the tight-knit Korean community. Shortly after the start of the Korean War, Harry and Roksun marry in 1951.
When were you married?
5th of May.
5th of May. We're close, we're close. 5th of May, 1951.
John M. was only 14 when the Korean War broke out. His father was the chief fireman in Yeoju, just outside of Seoul, only miles from the battle zone of the 38th parallel.
And when the North Korean came over, they killed many South Korean, that they're thinking they were the collaborator with the South Korean government and American spies. When the South Korean soldiers went to the North Korean, they killed a lot of North Korean, thinking they are communist, maybe some of them are. So when they are moving back and forth, always a lot of people has been killed. My father was one of the earliest casualties in the Korean War. I talked to my mom, and mom gave me 2 chickens. And so I took it to the marketplace and I sold it for my travel expenses. Out of that, I was able to go the DMZ 9th Corps, and I waited about 2 weeks, and then finally they hired me as a houseboy. Houseboy is cleaning the tent and shoe shining or any errand they ask me to do, and the cleaning in the winter time, cleaning the oil stove, which is get dirty easily, and also whatever they asked me to do. I did work as a houseboy for about a year. They paid me $15 a month, but it was a great opportunity for me at the time, learning American way of life, that learning English.
It
11 more brides, 10 Korean and 1 Chinese, but all from Korea, arrive in California with their husbands. It's a happy homecoming for all concerned, a new home far from the terrors of battle-scarred lands. Three of the couples bring their blessed events with them.
From 1951 through 1964, 28,000 Korean women immigrated as war brides. In rural Oregon, one couple, Harry and Bertha Holt, watch a documentary film about children orphaned as a result of the Korean War. In addition to taking care of their family and farm in Creswell, Oregon, the Holts begin the first large-scale international adoption program.
We didn't immigrate here because we wanted to come. We immigrated here because adults wanted to bring us here.
She was born during the war to a Korean woman and an American GI.
There was no possibility for me to really have a good life in Korea, given the circumstances that my mother was Korean and my father was not. And that simple fact would have followed me always. It was the stigma of orphan as well as the stigma of being mixed race. I didn't meet another adoptee until I was 17 years old. In a very short period of time, we knew each other better than childhood friends that I had known as long as I could remember. And it was based on this common experience that was so deeply profound and felt by both of us. And, you know, we were both very happy, I would say well-adjusted, 17-year-olds. But it was the, did you ever feel this? Did this ever happen to you? Kind of conversations that we'd never had with anyone else or even known that there was a longing for.
Reverend Sung Jung Kim was originally from North Korea. In 1961, Pastor Kim arrives in America to study theology. His wife later joins him. Between Pastor Kim's sermons, driving, and job instruction, as well as his wife's cooking and support, the two pioneer a rather unique Korean ministry. In the years of his ministry, Pastor Kim helped over 2,000 people from Korea find jobs and housing. Each morning, he'd get up early, his wife would pack sack lunches for the men that he would help, and drive them to the job site in his van.
When you think of the way that we made the film, by going to people's homes, by having meals with them, by learning to take our shoes off when we go to their house, by attending their ceremonies and their celebrations, you can't help but not only get closer to a community, but to grow in respect for it, and admiration, and empathy, certainly. And there's one scene in the documentary where a young woman named Michelle is talking about her mom, who came from Korea to the U.S. and started a business. And that's a pretty common story. You move from one country and go to the U.S. and start a business. Her mom had been a successful businesswoman, professional in Korea, college educated. And when she came to the U.S., the business that she started was a dry cleaning business. And the culture shock and what her experience she found was that people just treated her very poorly because her English wasn't perfect. And they took her for granted as if, you know, she was stupid or lower class servant just because maybe she had a strong accent and didn't even think for a minute that she might have had a master's degree, might have run a successful software company in Korea, but just was just rude and disrespectful. And a lot of people, when they see that particular part of the documentary, get a little teary, and it's a very touching moment. And I think I've heard people say afterwards that they'll never walk into a dry cleaner again and just make assumptions that they used to make. And I think that not only has changed my assumptions, but I think hopefully has changed the assumptions of anyone who's seen the film.
A lot of Koreans that come here, they have college degrees.
and they graduated college, and some even had great jobs in Korea, but they come here and it's not acknowledged, you know, it doesn't matter.
Michelle Park's parents immigrated to Oregon in the early 1980s to seek greater economic opportunity. Both of her parents worked, her father is a local businessman, and her mother started a dry cleaning business.
It's not the most glorifying job. It's a lot of hard work. Even if you do know the language, it's a lot of hard work, you know, just trying to please customers and producing quality, you know, work. But add on top of that, not knowing the language. If I just think about it, it's heartbreaking. She works 12, 13 hours a day, and she comes home, and I don't know what goes on during the day, but I see her come home, and, like, she just starts to cry. As I got older and I kind of observed her at work, it was the most degrading thing like she could go through, like anyone could go through, just because she can't pronounce a word or she doesn't understand, like her grammar's not perfect. Like people will think she doesn't understand what they're saying. It's so great to see how she's overcome that. And that's why I see her as my role model. I think it was more of a struggle for them to learn the language here and to understand American culture. But for me, it's trying to come to terms with the fact that I don't know if I'm Korean or if I'm American. I don't know, you know those Venn diagrams where, like, you're Korean and there's an American? And then the middle part where, like, you're a different category, right? Like, that's how I feel I am.
I just hope that they do know what's American, what's Korean, and they can choose the good things and mix together and better life.
And I think my parents do try to kind of hold on, you know, to preserve, to kind of give us, my brother and I, a glimpse of what it is to be Korean. And then I'm trying to, in a way, show them, well, how it's to be American. I just remember just growing up and hearing different stories from, you know, my mom about her, the way she grew up. And I'm like, but mom, we're in the United States. I don't need to, you know, follow those Korean traditions. But as I'm getting older, I just realize how important, that's kind of that is my identity, you know, being Korean-American.
In Oregon, according to, like, the U.S. Census of 2000, the Asian population of Oregon is only 3%. And the Korean population of Oregon constitutes, of the total state population, 0.3%. So they're a minority even among minorities. When I looked at all the hardships that the Korean-American community has faced, and still how much they persevere and how kind of positive and driven their attitude remains, it's really remarkable. I really find a lot to admire. And the amount of community service and community work that so many of them put in. There's a Korean American school where they teach the Korean language, Korean culture. There's a group for the Northwest Korean Culture Society that really helps families, especially Anglo families with adopted Korean children, to assimilate and to walk that, you know, the both worlds of the Asian identity and the kind of more mainstream American identity, and how to raise a child to be, you know, living in both worlds. We met grocers and dry cleaners, but we met lawyers and state senators and really very successful doctors and businessmen, and it definitely runs the whole gamut. But I think what's shared is that they're very proud in their identity as Koreans. They're very proud to be Korean. That's very important to them, and that kind of keeps that strength is really, I think, what motivates a Korean character and is really admirable.
You have been listening to A Century of Korean Immigration to Oregon for KBOO Radio as part of Radio Beyond Borders.
Good morning, my name is Mia Kim. I'm the host and producer of Radio Beyond Borders. I appreciate all your support for the work I do on this program, Radio Beyond Borders. Please call 503-232-8818.
Thank you, Mie, and thank you for that wonderful program about picture brides. And joining me is Andrew out there at Membership Central. Andrew, hello. How's it going out there?
Well, it's going quite well. We've had a really good morning out here, and we are looking to kind of keep that momentum going. We're in the home stretch of the Fall 2006 Membership Drive. We just need a few thousand more dollars to hit our $175,000 goal.
Mie just gave the local number. Can you give the outside the area number for people who might be listening?
I think I can. It's 877-500-5266. We're looking to raise $360 in this break right here. One of you could do that as a dollar a day contributor to KBOO Radio.
It's certainly not too much to ask from some people, I'm sure. And you know, some people are sitting back on their laurels and they think, you know, I'm going to put a shout out to all the librarians out there. I would like the librarians to call in and contribute to KBOO, become a member, and call all your other librarian friends who might be at work right now, but have them call in right now. We want to see a show of force from the librarians out there.
I've heard that the librarian community is actually a powerful force to reckon with.
They certainly are, and if they and since they're so concerned with free speech, and we know that they are, and since I'm a big fan of librarians, I would like them to call in right now at 503-232-8818. And right now we are trying to support Mie's program, and of course those of you that tune in and to hear some of the only programming that addresses the Asian community in Oregon. And in the world, actually, for that matter, is Mie's program, Radio Beyond Borders, and
well,
right now.
And we also have the APA Collective, the APA Compass, Asian Pacific Islander Collective, that's on Fridays. I guess it's the first Friday of the month. Radio Beyond Borders, there are a couple of other shows, but quite honestly, this is really the only radio station that would take on the issue. And I want to let folks know, if you give us a call now, for a $60 pledge.
A librarian.
Oh my God, a librarian.
I love librarians.
Think of another industry to approach. While I mention here, for a $60 pledge, you could get a DVD, an hour-long DVD called Sun Guja, A Century of Korean Pioneers. And my apologies on the pronunciation if that was wrong. This DVD retraces the 100-year history of Korean immigration to the Pacific coast of the United States. It has first-hand accounts including family farmers, a Taekwondo master, a Korean War veteran, and Korean adoptees. It says here that creative cinematography and rare historical archive footage is accompanied by traditional Korean folk music performed by Korean Americans. And the cover art, this thing is sealed here so I can't actually open it up to take a look inside, but the cover art is really quite beautiful. It's sort of that Asian-style calligraphy that you see. Here, take a look, Emily.
It's beautiful.
It is.
It is
so
beautiful. I think it's an ink block painting.
Oh, okay. Maybe it's ink block.
And for those of you that call right now, you are supporting this program in particular. So please, we need you to call right now. And again, a shout out to all librarians in the Portland area, and call your friends and the other librarians in the Portland area. We still have, I think, four lines open at 503-232-8818. That's 503-232-8818. And this is for Mie Kim and Radio Beyond Borders. This goes up until we go for the next 6 minutes here, and hoping that you'll call right now, 503-232-8818. We have a plethora of thank you gifts that we give you for becoming a member of KBOO. But
let me tell you about another one here that's very specific to this program. You can get for also a $60 pledge, two documentaries on a CD. It's a one-hour CD of Radio Beyond Borders productions. One of them is called U.S. Veterans on War and Peace, and the other one is Voices of Iraqi Americans on War and Peace. This is produced by Mie Kim, whose show we just heard. This is the, the first of these two stories features voices of U.S. veterans, past and present, on issues of war and peace. And the second one features voices of Iraqi Americans, which basically you don't ever hear Iraqi Americans on the radio. So that's one of the things that cable really tries to focus on, is providing neglected perspectives in terms of broadcast media, unpopular perspectives, controversial perspectives. Give us a call if you think that that's what radio should be doing. 503-232-8818 or toll free 877-500-5266.
Somebody just called the air room here at a different number, but the number again, are the numbers that Andrew just gave, not the air room number. And I was telling that person that we're hoping to end our pledge drive tomorrow at noon, and we can do that if you call.
No. We are ending it tomorrow at noon.
Let me say that we're going to reach the goal by tonight, maybe at the end of this program. Librarians kick in, my goodness.
We would like to end the drive before Friday noon, but we've determined that if we had to go that long, that's what it takes to raise the $175,000 that we need. I want to mention that Mike in Portland called in towards the end of the last hour, Helen out in Aloha, John in Portland, Bonnie is a new member in Ridgefield, Washington. I guess Mike, Helen, and John were renewing. It looks like Chris in Portland called in to renew, and Bruce from Portland is a new member. So thanks to them. Call us now, and I'll read your name out on the air.
Hey, and that's something. That's quite something.
Doesn't happen every day.
No, it doesn't. You know, when you call 503-232-8818 and become a member of KBOO, not only do you get your fabulous KBOO membership card and all the discounts at, for instance, the Pet Psychic, was mentioned the other day. I think that's great.
You're supporting an organization
that trains people like Mie and like Andrew. Who trained you, Andrew? What was that person?
I was untrained.
All right. He is feral.
That's right. Feral Radio Production.
Well, I remember that I trained you just initially in some of the early parts, not, of course, all the way to the end, but most people end up taking themselves through, sort of, we get you started, we take you through, and then you go. And a lot of people that come through here, that's exactly what she did.
Yeah.
She's going out and she's actually making money, and that's a fabulous, and winning awards, by the way. Mie Kim is an award winner. You're going to talk about that? Talk about that.
I wanted to mention the membership benefits. These are just a quick sampling of discounts you get all around town as a card-carrying member of KBOO Radio. Okay, African Rhythm Traders, it's a drum shop. You get 10% off on everything that's not already on sale. Artichoke Music, you get 10% off stuff. More instruments. Let's see, Chimney Services, you get 10% off a chimney sweeping. Common Ground Wellness Center, you get 10 bucks off the annual membership. Laughing Horse Books, 5% off all books.
I'm sorry, what was that book again?
Laughing Horse.
Oh, you're giving some of
the membership benefits.
I'm trying to engineer and do this. It's just, you know, it's
so
not
let's
happening.
See. Hawthorne Veterinary Clinic, 10% off all vet services. Coventry Cycle Works, 10% off all bicycle service, labor only. St. John's Booksellers, you get 15% off.
$60 is a basic membership.
$40 is a basic membership.
$40?
But $40 has to be done all at once. You can do $60 as $5 a month out of your checking account.
And do we still have any of those books from Teresa's program?
I'm sure we do, but I'd really like to try and get out some of these copies of Mie's productions, this one-hour CD featuring two programs, U.S. Veterans on War and Peace and Voices of Iraqi Americans on War and Peace. That CD of two of Mie's shows are available for a $60 pledge. If you don't want CDs, maybe you're interested in the Century of Korean Pioneers DVD. We only have three of those, and that also is a $60 pledge. We also, look at this. I just realized there's this too. Another program that's in this slot a different week, Chicanismo by Carlos Chavez, featured Jeff Chang earlier in this drive. And he had some books associated with that program in this time slot. And we've actually got, for a $120 pledge, you can do that 10 bucks a month. You can do it on your credit card all at once. I would like to be able to offer you Can't Stop, Won't Stop by Jeff Chang
and
The Republic of East L.A. by Luis J. Rodriguez and Me Today, You Tomorrow by Andy Hamilton.
So you can get those when you dial?
All of them.
Dial, I say, push the buttons.
Push the buttons, dial. Speak into your computerized phone and say, call KBOO.
You know,
there's stuff that does
somebody
that.
Somebody just came in. That's really fabulous. That's really great, too. You can come on down to 20 Southeast 8th, and you can meet us. And sometimes, if you have enough time, we'll give you a tour of the station. 503-232-8818. The station, that's the number to call. The station is at 20 Southeast 8th in between Burnside and Ankeny. We're going to go now to Art Focus. We'd sure like to hear from some more librarians. I understand we had some calls, but I have a feeling that there's more of you out there. So keep those phones ringing while we go to our regular scheduled programming. And, of course, right now on Art Focus, Julie's guests are Kelly, Alexson, and Jonathan from the Portland Art Center. I hope that Julie is listening. No, I'm not sure she's ready yet for us. I can't see in there. No, I think not. I think not. We have to keep talking. We have to keep talking. So she comes in. You spew a little bit more. I'm going to find her theme.
All right. So people may have not come across KABU before. If you are new to listening to this radio station, you might be thinking, what's this about? This is not like the other radio I've ever heard. We are a listener-sponsored, non-commercial community radio station. No commercials ever. You just give me some sort of signal when you're ready in there with the...
I will. I'm gonna run out and go look for her.
Okay.
This is this is real people radio.
That's right. This is what happens when it's
this.
Actually people running radio
you
as opposed to machines.
You can hear my phones when I run away. Here. Can you hear me out?
Yeah, do that. Okay, so this is listener-sponsored, non-commercial community radio. We are owned by our contributors. There's about 7,000 of you out there, and more would be better. So we have about 70,000 listeners, only 7,000 members. You might think, wow, only 10%? Actually, 10% is a very high level of contributing listeners in terms of community radio. So we're actually doing really, really well. What we want are more listeners. So if you've been listening and you think, yeah, right, this is a cool thing, I'm going to call and support it. The number to call is 503-232-8818 or toll free at 877-500-5266. And if you've recently discovered KABU and think it's a cool thing, tell some people you know about it and say, hey, do you know about this radio station at 90.7 in Portland?
If you're a librarian out in Squim, or if you're a librarian up or out in, along the coast.
Or a librarian with Squim.
That's right. You can call 1-888, is it?
877.
Oh, sorry.
877-500-5266.
You think it would be tattooed on the inside of my frontal lobe, but it isn't yet.
We'll get that before the spring.
We're going right now to Art Focus. Thank you, Andrew, for filling in our time. And now, our theme.
Allons dansons. Well, I love cubism. It's my favorite style. When I see a cubist painting, I just gotta smile. But there's one painter I'm his biggest fan. He's the father of cubism. His name's Cézanne. Cézanne, the father of cubism.
Good morning. Well, we're getting a kind of a slow start here this morning, but soon to carry on. And I'm amazed we're still out there trying to get money from you so that we continue with this brave experiment. And I want to say hello and introduce my guests this morning, who are from the Portland Arts Center. And I'm going to have them introduce themselves. And one has just arrived. Good morning.
Good morning.
It's a gorgeous morning, isn't it?
It's beautiful out there.
Who are you?
Hi, I'm Jonathan Walters. I'm with a hand-to-mouth theater and working with the side of performance for this event we're going to talk about at the Portland Arts Center.
Okay, that is good, and thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
And Gavin Shetler is not here this morning, by the way, because he needed to go to a wedding.
Mm-hmm.
And so, anyway, we are going to be able to successfully do this program without Gavin, and I'm going to find out what's going on down there at the Portland Arts Center. And my next guest will introduce himself.
My name's Alex Reagan. I am
a member of Liminal Performance Group, and IMD Dramaturge, which means I do the historical research and help with the text for this performance.
Alex, what a super dark voice you have.
Thank you.
Talk some more. And then we have Kelly Rauer.
Mm-hmm.
And Kelly is the main... What do you do, Kelly, down there?
I'm the administrative manager for the Portland Arts Center. I've been working with Gavin since February of 2005. Okay. So I pretty much run the ship with Gavin and make sure things happen along down there.
All right. Now, when you say down there, let's... among the three of you, can you describe... atmosphere, what goes on there? It's a multi-purpose kind of a gallery, isn't it?
What's going on, the gallery, the Portland Arts Center, has been hosting contemporary arts, but also it has been delving into performance, and the Portland Catacombs, which is what is going on now, and it will be going from 6 days, starting this Thursday, all the way until Halloween from 8 to 11 p.m., is a performance piece that mixes performance and visual arts and delves into Portland history. It's a walking tour haunted house that encourages audience interaction.
Okay. And can you enlarge on that? Are you wearing costumes? How about you? Can you... add to this explanation?
Yeah, it's a pretty fascinating idea. Gavin and Kelly came up with it probably a year ago. Mm-hmm. We've been talking about it for a long time. And the idea is to combine seamlessly, we hope. at this point, we have seven actors are inside these catacombs, this environment that we built inside the Portland Arts Center, and they all are drawn from Alex's research into the history of that neighborhood, Old Town Chinatown, and they're composite characters from different decades based upon real historical people, and they're mixed in with visual artists who are at work while you travel through the space. There's video artists working, sound artists, painters, sculptors, who are all interpreting and creating and making artwork live during this evening while the performers are sort of circling around and inhabiting each other's space as the audience moves through.
It's
been a really interesting experiment to see how Fever Theater and Hand to Mouth have come to the table using the information that Alex has pulled together, working in the same space with visual artists, all responding to this historical material and elaborating on these ideas, consistently adding and developing new pieces over the whole course of the show. We have Ian McNichol and R.C. Douglas, Theodore Holt, and let's see, who am I forgetting? Upstairs. And there's also Emily. She's doing a performance piece in the stairwell that's pretty intriguing as well. But they're all working together, and it's been a pretty interesting experience to see audience come in and experience everyone working together.
Okay. Would you like to add to that then?
Well, I would say that a major facet of this project is that we are continuing to build it as time goes on. It's a process-based work, which is why we brought separate performance artists like Emily Stone, who is creating kind of an installation in one of the stairwells and constantly putting up different kind of images on top of one another. And for the visual artists as well, who are painting actors' faces as they, all night pretty much, and creating more and more mass, almost creating our own history in these catacombs. It's almost we started off with kind of using Portland history as a root, and now these characters have kind of blown up into creating this own world, almost this kind of purgatory that is based on Portland history, but now has a new future.
Okay, well, now what particular parts of Portland history are you using? Can you explain that a little bit more?
I would say that we are going back in a range about 125 years,
okay,
which Portland really goes back to about the 1860s of when it was really starting to become a city. But we're focusing on the history of Old Town. Uh-huh. So we have characters like, who we call Nancy Sullivan, but she's based on several characters, one being a Shanghaier, whose name was Larry Sullivan, mm-hmm. and Nancy Boggs, who ran a bordello and a whiskey scow that would run away from the police from the east bank of the Willamette to the west bank and back and forth. And we're kind of trying to take on with these kind of characters the kind of seedier elements that have existed in Old Town over the years.
Oh, sure.
This creates kind of the haunted element of it, and I think also the excitement.
Okay. Well, let's hear what kind of costumes do you wear. Do you want to talk about the costumes and how you came to choose them? Because costumes are pretty important in something like this, aren't they?
Sure. There was the thought, one of the first ideas was that we would pick a particular time, 1890, and focus on the life in this neighborhood at this time. But Alex had been doing research into the history, the longer stretch, the last 120 years, and came up with the concept that's much more interesting to not place these characters in a particular time, but to give a feeling that we're creating a new world, a sort of alternate future, alternate past. And so the costumes reflect that in that they're uniform. We put everyone in shades of gray that in some way reference what era they're from, but not too distinctly. We don't want the audience to feel that I am in 1890 and now I'm in 1910 too clearly, because the other interesting thing is that these performers playing these historical characters that could never have met each other are all beginning to interact with each other in the style that Alex is suggesting. As the nights go on, they discover night after night new ways in which their lives are entangled, where a person who was a developer and a mayor of the town suddenly finds himself caught up with a smut peddler, and over time they become linked, not realistically, not on anything historical, but what's happening in this experiment, 3 hours of performance a night, and the actors and the audience interacting. And often it's the audience that suggests ways that they're linked. It's actually audience interaction that sort of, they begin asking questions, and they pursue how are you linked, and it sort of forces the actors and this whole project to discover how is this world all interconnected.
Is this working well? How's it going? You getting lots of people coming by?
We are, yes, and we're expecting to get nice attendance the last week, especially because we're going consistently 6 days. Uh-huh. And Halloween night, we hope it becomes a party.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and it's going to become a party on Halloween night.
Well, we're hoping a lot of people show up.
Yeah. Saturday night is going to be a pretty interesting evening. We were contacted by a group of clowns. They go around every Halloween, they drive around in the clown bus, and there's 50 of them all dressed in clown suits. And they're coming to the Portland Art Center to inhabit the catacombs. And I'm sure it'll be kind of an obscure experience for people walking by, wondering what in the world is going on at the Portland Art Center. Because there'll be a ton of clowns out in the front and in the space, too. So it's going to be...
You watch those clowns.
We're going to have to keep a close watch on
them. Remember the Santa Clauses that used to break everything up?
Yeah, I thought maybe we should have them come down, too.
Oh, you have to move out.
It's that fine line between performance and audience.
Yeah.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Well, now, how much does it cost and so forth for people out there who might like to go?
It's 10 to 20, pay what you can. And it's a continuous performance. It starts at 8 o'clock and it runs until 11. With these busier nights, it's definitely, getting past 9:30, 10, being able to get everyone through, and if you came at like 11, I mean, we can't, the show would be over. So you just kind of have to play your odds and come and get signed up to a group and see how you can get through. So.
Okay. Well, we might need to know something about the other people who are in this performance. Do you want to tell us about Who else is there? Can you name any, are there any particular Portlanders out of the past history of Portland that we should know their name?
Are you talking about the characters?
Yeah, the characters. I need to know the characters.
One that we use by name because is the mayor, Bernard Goldsmith, mayor of Portland between 1869 and 1871. And since the Portland Arts Center is located in the Goldsmith Building,
yes,
we chose to use him because he is the great uncle of the founders of that building.
I see.
And one of our actors, Mark Modern, performs Mayor Goldsmith of aplomb. I don't know if he's necessarily always doing everything that Goldsmith did.
He
sometimes likes to kind of pass around, you know, the bribes and whatnot. But he's also dreaming up a city. And you as an audience member can write in his room what you wish to happen in this, in our mayor's city.
Okay.
You can put his suggestions down. He's also now drawing with R.C. Douglas, one of our artists, a map that audience members as well can place buildings or anything else that they want, their dreams of that city.
Is there a pronunciation person who can tell people how to pronounce some of those words like glisten? It isn't Gleason, it's Gleason. I want to make a special request that you call the streets by the right names, because Dr. Gleason was a Portland person.
Well, I definitely know that we're not going to let anyone call Cooch Street Couch Street.
No,
we don't.
It's Couch Street.
It is not Couch.
And we're sure, I think Everett Street gets by okay. Mm-hmm. And the rest of them are pretty good, aren't they? But we do remember Dr. Gleason and his family. And his son was Dr. Gleason, too. There were two Dr. Gleasons. Mm-hmm. And there are people still alive who are related to the Gleason family. Anyway, all these things are going to be accurate, you think?
I think that there was definitely kind of accuracy at the inset, but you must remember that these performers are now kind of taking these characters in new places. As, you know, the catacombs in itself is kind of this purgatory where you can kind of break the rules of having, you know,
time
where you have people coming from, you know, 150 years all meeting up. And that's, I think, more exciting when you can have a gypsy who, if people didn't know, Portland was considered to have a gypsy problem in the 1940s
and 50s. Oh, yes, I remember the gypsies.
And they went as far as to ban palm reading. It went to Supreme Court, and the city of Portland actually won. They called it a spiritualist con game.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, right now, guess what we have to do? We've got to go to the Pledge Central, as we used to call it, and don't call it anymore. We're going to Pledge Central, and they're going to pitch a little bit for us. And we're going to make some money, please,
absolutely,
to people out there.
That's
hello?
Right. Hi, Julie. It's Kathleen.
Hi, Kathleen.
I know you can't see me, but I am here.
I know.
On the computer.
Okay.
And I am just taking a few minutes to appeal to your listeners, Julie, the people who listen to Art Focus, maybe not every week, but they listen to it enough that they can now show their support by calling 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. Just have a few minutes to try to gather support for Art Focus and the work that Julie does day in and day out for this program. This program, I believe, is not only good for the art community, it's also good for the community at large, for people finding out about areas of Portland's life that they might not know about without listening to this show. I think it's a great informative resource. Julie's worked for about probably close to 20 years on this show, going out and seeing shows, responding to requests, talking to each artist in a very respectful way, finding out about just where they're coming from, where this event, this very interesting event from the Portland Art Center that she's hearing about today. If you appreciate this kind of regular communication about the arts, we need to hear from you now. 503-232-8818, 1-877-500-5266. As you can hear, it kind of quieted down behind me, and that's because people are waiting for those phone calls of support. This will be the last chance to support Art Focus during this membership drive. So If you've been waiting for some reason and you haven't yet made that call of support, we'd really like to get a call right now for Art Focus to let us know that this program is of interest to you and the work that is done on it every week is of importance to you. Give us a call right now at 503-232-8818 or 1-877-500-5266. If you've heard of an artist or a group and checked it out because of this show, we'd like to hear your support right now. Just a few minutes, we're going to have Democracy Now. Why not take advantage of this opportunity to go to your phone, 503-232-8818, 1-877-500-5266. We have mentioned over this whole membership drive many, many gifts, many books, many CDs, many tapes, many other kinds of retail items that people have offered in support of us. And maybe that has interested you, but you haven't been able to go to the phone. Now is one of your last chances to do that. So please give us a call of support for Art Focus right now, 503-232-8818. 1-877-500-5266. If you're online, you can just go to www.kboo.fm, choose Join Now, and join the other people who have climbed onto the KBOO hill of support that we're trying to gather here right now. And we're in the last couple days of this drive, and we're looking for those of you who have put it off to the very last minute to come to the fore at this point. We know you're out there, and we know that you can make our phone ring. So please let Julie know that you support Art Focus. 503-232-8818, 1-877-500-5266. Our phone answerers are having way too much fun. We want them to be busy doing work, but they're celebrating something else. So please give us a call, 503-232-8818, 1-877-500-5266. Anything you want to add, Julie?
Well, yes, I think that it's abominable that they are having fun in there. This is terrible. And anyway, please pungle up, guys. You know that you're sitting there listening to Art Focus, and you've been listening for years and years, and now it's time for us to see a little of your money. And we need to keep going here. And so you need to call 503-232-8818, or if you are far away, 1-877-500-KBOO, and that's us. And by the way, the station ID is not. We are at 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 FM in the Columbia Gorge, 100.7 FM in the Willamette Valley. And so think how many people that is. That's so many people. And some of you have not given us a cent. And we continue to drag along here wishing that you would empty your pockets just a little bit and help us out here at KBOO, because we've gone beyond our time trying to get a little cash from you, and now it's your turn. It is your turn. Okay, and I have here with me this morning Kelly Rauer, who is the administrator manager. Did I pronounce it right and everything?
Kelly? Just close enough, yes.
At the Portland Arts Center, and we're discussing the Portland Arts Center, which has a new location at the end of the Burnside Bridge, and we're going to talk about the Portland Arts Center some more. And that is the northwest part of Old Portland, and Kelly Rauer is here. Kelly, I just introduced you, didn't
yes,
I? I'm
you
so
did.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Alex Reagan mm-hmm. is here. Now, let's see. Which of you guys is Alex?
That'd be me,
though. They came in just on the bell, as it were. Mm-hmm. And so, Alex, you need to tell us what you do again there.
I am the dramaturg for the Portland Catacombs project, which means that I did the historical research and provided some of the text for the performance.
I see. Okay. And then Jonathan Walters is hand-to-mouth theater. And do you want to explain what hand-to-mouth is again for us?
We share a space with Fever Theater, two experimental theaters that create original work, all new performance work. And Kelly and Gavin at Portland Arts Center approached us. We share the same building, and I think probably also share the same philosophy about contemporary art. Ours is contemporary performance. But we were approached, our two theater companies, to create the performance material for this project. So in this sort of sweeping, exciting way, they approached a great number of visual artists, and they approached two theater companies and said, could you provide living actors in this performance? And here's the historical material, which Alex provided, that we worked off of to create the performance from. So we've never really had a commission quite like this. You know, we usually make our own work, so this was really exciting.
Yeah, that's good.
That's been
sweeping, exciting. Mm-hmm. Good.
It's been a really great thing. I think it's just been a really great learning process. We all came to the table never having done something like this before, and I just really want to thank Jonathan and everyone with Hand to Mouth and Fever Theater, Alex and Colodi and Frank Marquin, who did the sound design. Everyone has done a really fabulous job coming with as much as they can and all working together. It's been really great to see everyone working together and to see how well we've put everything and made this development work. So,
well, and then Gavin Shetler makes the whole thing work too, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I mean, he's the big cheese in this outfit. Is he helpful?
You know,
of course he is.
Yeah, I might say maybe I'm the driving force behind as well. You know, we work together really well. There's no way we could have done this project as large as it was without everyone's really great commitment and attitude, and all of us being really open and doing our best to listen and communicate.
Okay, now I think what we need to do is to describe some of the other things that happen down there. I mean, a lot of people think of this new venue as being a gallery.
We do quite a lot of different things, and I think that's the biggest thing for the Art Center, at least Gavin and I, is working to really articulate what it is that we do down there. First of all, we're at 32 Northwest 5th Avenue, right on the corner of 5th and Cooch, in Old Town Chinatown. We moved there in December, remodeled in June. Right now, we really are working to provide a facility and also provide energy and movement to help support artists create installation work, be a space for art that is hard to show elsewhere. So, we really just want to provide space that's for work that's hard to show elsewhere and be a support to the community.
Okay. And are you either of you painters or artists?
No, I'm not.
You're not. In this, are you... In this play, I think maybe what we need to do is to give one more rousing description and wind up, because we're coming to an end of this interview, and so why doesn't Jonathan tell us something about
A rousing description? I'll do that.
Can you share a rousing description in 3 minutes?
I sure can. So Portland Catacombs is the event we've been talking about, and I think it's really special because it's a blend of performance, installation, and visual art, yet the visual art is happening before your eyes, which is a really rare occurrence.
Okay.
And all of this takes place inside of this beautiful, complex, spooky, historical environment that's built into this massive gallery space, art center space. And so you, as the audience, you're essential because the show is only working if you're there because it's interactive. And you can go as far and as deep in the catacombs, literally and psychologically, as you want. If you want to get there and really ask questions and really interact, you can have a great experience. And people have been doing that and steadily having a richer and richer experience now that they know that it's theirs to explore. It's sort of their world that they can create and inhabit. We all live in Portland, and this is a strange alternative take on Portland, a very artistic one. It's a fun way to spend your Halloween weekend.
Yeah, it's a great way to enjoy Halloween.
A quick clarifier.
Do you want to add to that?
Excuse I think Jonathan spoke well there, but I'd like to say again that the Portland Catacombs is running from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m., starting this evening and running all the way every night until Tuesday, which is Halloween.
All right. Do you want to add to
I was
that?
Just going
to
say it is not in the actual underground tunnels.
It is not the Shanghai tunnels.
It is not. If you would like a tour of the Shanghai tunnels, go to Portland Underground. They're a really great group that have been working to excavate some actual underground spaces. So they're a really great group. But we have transformed the Art Center two floors into catacomb-like maze spaces. So it is not in the actual tunnels.
Okay, and I would like to wish the Portland Art Center the best in their new appointment, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish you the best too. And thanks so much for coming, Kelly Rauer, Alex Reagan, and Jonathan Walters.
Thank you for having us.
Yes,
and this is Art Focus and Julie Bernard. And thank you, Jim.
Well, thank you, Julie, and guests. And the time is now about a minute and a half after 11 in the morning on KBOO in Portland, Oregon. Time for Democracy Now! But before we go to Democracy Now!, I just want to tell you that tonight at 6, tune in for an election special. Chris Andre will moderate a candidates forum with candidates for Judge of the Circuit Court, 4th District, Position 28. There are 9 candidates for this position, so Chris has got a handful. So tune in to hear them tonight at 6 p.m. And now for Democracy Now!